Blog Talk Radio.
The Boxing Fix.
Gentlemen, keep your guard up at all times. We're having a great second to step back without punching.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, boxing fans of all ages, we welcome you inside another edition of The Boxing Fix on Leave It in the Ring Radio and Blog Talk Radio. As always, I'm your host from out in Johnston, Rhode Island, Joel Sebastianelli, and alongside me out in beautiful Los Angeles, California, is Josh McDaniel. Josh, I always have a lot of positive things to say about the sport, and I always have some negative things too, and unfortunately this weekend, particularly regarding the highly anticipated Adrian Broner Vicente Escobedo fight, I have a lot more negative things to say about positive. It was certainly an interesting weekend for sure.
Hey, Joel, will you brush my hair for me?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, man.
I'm too far away.
It was a crazy weekend. I mean, there was some positive stuff, but I kind of agree there were a lot of negative things that went on. Some interesting, some not. I was one of them that gripe about the whole Broner thing. And just to start off talking about that real quick is, you know, I like Broner. I've always found him interesting to watch. I love the antics for the most part. I've always been interested in that. You know, it's funny. But this was a little too far, especially after acting unprofessional the way he did for the weigh-in and everything.
I just absolutely abhor guys that make it all about the antics and try to put on that sort of a show. For me, and it's been well documented on this program, I love guys like Vladimir Klitschko who show up to the ring, they don't talk all that much trash, and they just go and take care of business, and they don't put on this whole Floyd Mayweather sort of act. And I think with the weigh-in, it's just another example of Adrian Broner morphing into a bit of a Floyd Mayweather III, if you will. You know, for Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Adrian Broner, so many similarities. I just find it so frustrating. But he is a showman, and if he keeps up at the pace that he's shown so far, he's definitely going to be a star in the making. But we have a great show for you tonight. I know I say that every single week, but I really mean it this time. We've got Vladeen Biasi coming on the show a little bit later tonight after his victory at Twin River Event Center in Lincoln, Rhode Island on Thursday night. Andrew Hernandez and Gabino Sainz also coming on the program. Ryan Bivens will be making an appearance late, as well as he always does, to talk about some of the fights that you may have missed and need to watch over the course of the weekend. Fantastic show, and with that, we will launch right into the Boxing Blitz to give you a bit of a brief synopsis of the weekend of fights that we had before we move on into some of the other stuff and into some more detailed recaps. Thursday night, of course, at Twin River Casino, Vladeen Biasi picked up a TKO victory over Michael Walchuk. We'll be having him on the show a little bit after 9:30 Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific. Friday night at the Chumash Casino in Santa Ynez, California, on Showtime, in the main event in the lightweight division, Art Hovhannisyan picked up a split decision win over Miguel Acosta. And in the super bantamweight division, Roman Morales improved to 11-0 with 7 knockouts by defeating Alexis Santiago, also by unanimous decision.
Yeah, you know, and I really wanted to go to that fight over in Santa Ynez, but you know, I had some things going on Friday. But it was a decent card. I didn't care too much of the Hovhannisyan fight. It was pretty good. I thought it could have been better. I wanted to see more from Hovhannisyan. You know, it was a pretty interesting fight. But that, even the first fight was was a Roger Mayweather was a trainer for that one fight, and he ended up losing. You know, but it was a decent card. I preferred the ESPN card though a little bit better.
Honestly, I like the Showtime card. I thought it got a little bit of a bad rap from people. I thought it was a relatively enjoyable night of fights, although ESPN had some good bouts as well. Also on that card in the lightweight division, Jonathan Maciello ran his record to 17-0 with 10 knockouts at TKO in round number 3 over the tough and tested journeyman Daniel Ada. at the Edgewater Casino in Laughlin, Nevada, ESPN2's Friday Night Fights, as you mentioned, in the super featherweight division. Juan Carlos Burgos picking up the victory over the previously undefeated Cesar Vasquez in a bout that came to an end very, very quickly, in an end that not a whole lot of people anticipated. A TKO win for Juan Carlos Burgos, 1 minute and 50 seconds into round number 3.
Yeah, that fight I really liked, although short. I mean, it was a pretty fast-paced action fight. And Vasquez was looking good early on in that first round, and even most of the second round, I thought. But that, he hurt him bad, and I was like, man, that guy was, I was trying to see if they were going to let it go on, because he wouldn't fall down. He would have probably been better suited if he took a knee or something.
In the welterweight division, Aaron Martinez picked up a victory over Prentice Brewer, which heading in was a bit of a toss-up fight, but Martinez eked out the split decision. A split decision, though, that wasn't very popular with a lot of people. Most people seem to think that Martinez ran away with that bout.
Yeah, and you know what? I wanted to, earlier when we were setting up for the show, we were talking about before or later on in the show when we do our rants or raves, I was thinking about that, but I wanted to just say that off the bat, that is just ridiculous. Plain ridiculous how that, even the fact that the two that had it for Martinez had it 77-75. I mean, I had more of a widespread margin than that, but that's, I'm lost for words just on that.
It's too bad that I can almost justify stuff like this by saying that it's far from the worst decision I've ever seen. That's just the sport that we have.
Right.
I had it 77-75 for Martinez, and even though I don't really see how Brewer could have won, I saw people that had it a shutout, and to me that was also kind of unrealistic too. I didn't see it as being that big a blowout. But regardless, also on the card, Vitor Freitas Jones in his professional debut picked up a knockout in round number 2 of Araco Espinosa. Freitas Jones, the great nephew of the Brazilian warrior Asilenio Popo Freitas. I thought he looked really solid.
Yeah, and I was waiting to see if you were going to bring that up, because you know I got to say it. You know I love to say that nickname, Popo. You know, so we'll go ahead and start it off like that. That was a great fight. I was really impressed before him. You know, he looked good in that first round. But I don't want to be a total ass, but to take a little bit away from him is the guy he did fight had, I think, 3 losses by knockout in the first round already. So, but he took care of business.
It's a professional debut. You know, right. If you're fighting guys like that in your 18th career fight, then we've got some issues. Or if you're like Deontay Wilder and 21-0 against guys like this, yeah, that's a bit of an issue. But for Freitas Jones, it's a very good start to his professional career. Another man making his professional debut was Brett Rather in the heavyweight division. He, I wasn't all that impressed with, honestly, in his unanimous decision win, 40-36, 40-36, 39-37. I was more impressed with his opponent, Terrell Woods, who, despite taking the fight on less than a week's notice, showed a lot of heart in that performance.
I was impressed with the fight, period. I didn't even want to watch it, to tell you the truth, but the good thing was only 4 rounds. I mean, they were both heavy, heavyweights. Like, they weren't in the best of shape as far as body-wise. I don't like watching that. It feels like I'm watching two guys fight over a buffet line, so that's how I felt personally.
ESPN's Dan Rayfield plowing through a buffet line. I suppose that's the image I've got when you say that of heavyweights. It's something I'm very critical about the heavyweight division, and another reason why I have this self-proclaimed love affair with the Klitschko brothers, because those guys are in good shape, and there's a lot of guys in the heavyweight division that just aren't. If you look at the great heavyweights of all time, there are very few that have the sort of Areola Rather body type. I don't like guys who just come in, because to me it looks sloppy. You gotta look toned to me for me to really enjoy it, or else it just looks sloppy, and guys like that typically tend to fight sloppy. It's something about the UFC's heavyweight division why I think a lot of people are flocking to that more than the heavyweight division in boxing, not just because it puts on, you know, great fights, but because it's great athletes, as opposed to guys who come in out of shape like Chris Areola after too many 2 a.m. tacos. But regardless, did you really see anything in Brett Rather that makes you think that he was really that incredible?
Yeah, I saw one thing. Well, not incredible. I saw one thing is I never want to see it again. That's the one thing I saw. I didn't want to see him again. So, no, he's not incredible to me.
Saturday night, July 21st at the U.S. Bank Arena in Cincinnati, Ohio on HBO's Boxing After Dark in the Super Featherweight division. What a fiasco it was. This bout was on, then it was off, then it was on, then it was off, with Vicente Escobedo reportedly walking away from negotiations with Adrian Broner and Golden Boy on multiple occasions, but eventually they were able to settle. When they got in the ring, it was a no contest. Broner, who was a good one or two divisions above Vicente Escobedo in terms of weight and in terms of skill, knocked out the tough Escobedo in round number five. Porchente never stood a chance.
Yeah, you know, and to talk about real quick about it being on, it being off, early in the morning I heard that it was a possibility that it would be off, and I was, all day I was trying to get a hold of, you know, Joel Diaz, the trainer of Escobedo, and I got a hold of him, and this is when the fight was just on the balance end at the time, and, you know, Joel Diaz, talked to Joel Diaz, and, you know, it was on Leave It in the Ring radio, I put it out there that Joel Diaz told me the fight was off. He told me actually to call him back in 15 minutes after negotiating, called him back about 30 minutes to an hour later because he didn't answer the phone right away. So I figured they're still negotiating. So I waited a while, called him. He said, fight's off. You know, they didn't want to do it anymore. To me, it almost sounded like he didn't want to go through with it because, which I don't blame him. His wife fight a bigger guy that couldn't make weight, and the guy just on purpose didn't make weight so he could be bigger because he doesn't care anymore, you know, about that weight division. And that's what I took from it. Well, they continued to negotiate way after. I've heard a lot of different things about how they were throwing the whole kitchen sink, you know, of money at them. And I kind of don't blame him for taking the fight after getting offered that amount of money, which I'm sure is around $400,000 or $500,000 possibly, from what I've heard. Don't know exactly how much, but you know, it was just ridiculous, and just because of that, it caused me not to be able to get any food in my stomach for the longest time because I was too busy on Twitter and calling Joel Diaz. So thank you, Broner, for making me starve for about 4 hours, 5 hours.
Vicente Escobedo, the 2004 Olympian, lost in the round of 16 to Rafsan Husanov of Azerbaijan. Very talented fighter, very highly touted coming out, and unfortunately, because his career hasn't been nearly as big a moneymaker as a lot of people expected, he's been unfortunately relegated to the point where he needs to take that money. But good for him for getting the money. It's something that I said on Friday, where I would have demanded the kitchen sink right away because the bout really hinged on him. Broner lost the title on the scales. You would have to think that it's got to cross his mind at some point that because Broner is so big, it's actually dangerous being in the ring there with him. And you know what? If the bout hinges on you, he is in the position of power. And I was very glad to see that Escobedo at least got paid very, very well for putting up with all of that just unprofessional BS from Adrian Broner. It was absolutely disgusting, poor sportsmanship all the way around. I was very, very displeased with that entire card. Keith Thurman also fought on it as well in the welterweight division. He's now 18-0 with 17 knockouts, picking up the victory in round number 6 against Orlando Lora. Thurman is somebody who, his style kind of annoyed me. I didn't like the flamboyant personality, the flamboyant ring generalship of Thurman. That stuff just doesn't appeal to me. I found it frustrating. Pretty spirited, tough performance until just saying, no mas, no more in round number 6. Did you like what you saw from Thurman?
I didn't get too much out of it. I don't know what you think about him really yet. Like, to me, the guy he fought, you know, although people were backing him up and saying, you know, he's a tough fighter, he's a good opponent to, you know, to test Thurman and stuff, from what I heard from a lot of people, I felt like he almost quit. I wouldn't, you know, so he got up quick. He didn't look hurt. He got up really quick. I think he got up at 4. It's a 4 count, you know, and he looked fine, and he's the one that told – he just looked at his corner and said, I don't want to fight no more. I got – you know, I put in a little bit of work, you know, gave people what they wanted, and, you know, time to cash my check. That's what I got from it. I could be wrong, but that's my take. And I think he has potential, but for him to – the fact that he called out, like, Floyd Mayweather and everybody, that I found that funny. That was pretty interesting.
That was pretty ridiculous. I just – didn't see all that much from Thurman. I saw some good power. I'll say that. He certainly had some good power, and it's not like a lot of fighters where those knockout numbers in the first 15 fights or so mean absolutely nothing. I mean, he really did have power, and he fought against a relatively credible opponent in Orlando Lora for this stage in his career. Omar Figueroa, though, is the prospect that impressed me, and this is a fight I would have rather seen on HBO. To be honest, in the lightweight division, Figueroa improved to 19-0-1 with 15 knockouts. He picked up a unanimous decision win over Dominic Salcido, 97-93, 97-93, 98-92. Now, there is a prospect who looked really impressive Saturday night.
Yes, and let's not forget, that's also he's also trained by Joel Diaz, and remember we had Joel Diaz on the show and
2 weeks
said,
ago, yep,
and he said that if Broner goes up to 135 that Figueroa will destroy him. I like Figueroa a lot. He even got tested. They showed the highlights on HBO, so everyone who hasn't seen the fight, you know, I'm sure you can see it on Sweet Boxing's website later, who we'll have on. You know, if you watch the HBO telecast, you saw him get tested. He got rocked with the right hand, and he survived. He battled it out and pulled off the victory and looked great doing it.
Yeah, he did. He looked very good. Also, Brandon Bennett in the lightweight division, he's now 14-0 with 7 knockouts. Picked up a wide unanimous decision win over John Nader, who drops to 9-2 with 8 knockouts. Bennett looked pretty fair, if you could catch that fight online as well. Now, one event from the weekend that I would have loved to have been to was at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, Florida. It aired on Telefutura in the United States. Of course, I don't get that channel, so I have to find a way to watch this online, which I'm always so disappointed living in the Northeast because we don't get Telefutura. We don't get that Argentine network, TYC. We don't get any of that stuff, so I miss out on a lot of good fights that are international or bigger in the Hispanic community, at least. So in Hollywood, Florida, in the super featherweight division, Argenis Mendez picked up a victory over Martin Honorio, a unanimous decision win, 115-111, 116-110, 117-109 for the IBF super featherweight title eliminator. What did you think?
It was a good fight. And again, I don't think I have that channel either, although I could get it on, but I'm tired of Dish Network. Yes, I said it again. But yeah, it was a good fight. I liked it. What did you think about it?
I was impressed with Mendez. I enjoyed the fight. It was very good. It was a great card top to bottom, too.
Right.
Which, compared to anything else, if you go and you look at some of the other fights in here, in the welterweight division, Ed Paredes improved to 31-3-1 with 21 knockouts. With just over 30 seconds to go in the fight, he finally put away Vivian Harris by TKO. And poor Vivian Harris is just a shell of himself at this point.
Why is he still fighting is my question. How is he able to get... I mean, this guy, it seems like isn't it embarrassing? That's my question. Isn't it embarrassing to keep going out now and be, like you said, a shell of yourself?
I think it is. And granted, he's never been a huge moneymaker throughout his career, but I also can't imagine that he's making all that much money now, getting absolutely trounced in fights like this. In the light welterweight division, Joan Guzman knocked out Jorge Pimentel 33 seconds into the fight. Now, that number right there, if you just look at the number, that's seriously impressive. 33 seconds for a knockout, not too bad.
I like Guzman. I don't care if he can't make weight ever. You know, I've always liked Joan Guzman. I just wish he could make weight for most of the time. But I think that's what everyone's more shocked about. I don't think people get shocked anymore when Guzman knocks these guys out quickly. I think they're just more shocked when they find out he makes weight.
Yeah, speaking of making weight, we have a caller on the line right now, Fabian, who wants to talk about Adrian Broner. Did I pronounce that right, Fabian?
Yep, you got it correct.
All right, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks a lot for having me. So basically what I wanted to touch on, and I know I said I wanted to talk about the Broner, but I heard you guys touch on the Thurman-Lora fight before. Let me tell you something about Thurman. He looked decent against an opponent that had no kind of talent. I mean, I don't even know how long they gave this poor guy to prepare for this fight before facing Thurman, but he comes on after the fight and basically calls out the best in the welterweight division after beating a nobody that had no kind of movement. The guy was a sitting target for this clown. So
exactly.
I just don't understand where he gets off even calling out a Floyd Mayweather. To be honest, you know, to me, Marcos Maidana isn't the greatest fighter in the world, but he does have power. He is by far better than Laura. And
agreed.
To be honest, I think if Maidana would have been the one in Laura's shoes, I don't even think we'd be talking about Thurman right now. I think Maidana would have probably put him to sleep. Because, I mean, after the, I want to say like the fourth or fifth round, Thurman slowed down. I don't know if he was getting gas because of all the knockouts he has. So he's never really fought, you know, a whole lot of rounds. So, like I said, I'm not in his body, so I don't know if he was getting gas or not. But in a fight against Maidana, I honestly believe Maidana would have put him down, you know, fifth, sixth round. Because those exchanges that he got in with Laura, unfortunately, Laura had no kind of talent, and I didn't even see any power out of this poor guy. But if he would have got into those exchanges that he got into with Laura, with Maidana would have put him down. Now,
you're absolutely right.
Touching on the Broner Escobedo fight, like you said, I mean, Escobedo, he got a nice paycheck. But the thing that hurts me is that people that don't know about boxing are going to give Broner, like when I came into work today, you know, I had a guy come up to me and tell me, oh, look at, you know, Broner, he's the best, he's going to do this. But these are morons that don't really know about boxing and don't know what, you know, everything that's going on behind the scenes. These guys don't know that Broner basically had every advantage he could have had in this fight, fighting in his hometown, you know, being the bigger fighter. I mean, you could tell right off the bat, this guy was huge compared to Escobedo. I mean, you could tell in the punch difference. Escobedo would touch him, and you couldn't even hear the punch. I mean, that's how big of a physical mismatch this was.
To me, something I found interesting about that is I know Adrian Broner is fighting in his hometown, but I thought that there would still be a lot more boos coming from the crowd when he was introduced. But instead it was Vicente Escobedo, who to the rest of the boxing world is really deemed as the good guy and – you know, the poor tragic hero in this scenario who had no choice but to fight and just got absolutely pummeled by somebody who is essentially cheating, coming in overweight. I don't care that he loses his title because popularity means far more than a title. I actually like when guys like Floyd Mayweather say, screw the title, I don't need it, I'm not going to pay the sanction fees. Why? Because I'm Floyd Mayweather, everybody knows me, I'm popular, and I don't need this. So that's no penalty for Broner whatsoever. Neither is the monetary amount that they gave him either. So I thought a lot more people would be booing him. What did you think, Josh?
I didn't think a lot of people were going to boo him. He's in his hometown. They adore him over there.
I agree.
You know, I wasn't expecting that. I think a lot of people that were booing Escobedo, and I'm going out on a limb here, is I think there are a lot of the Broner fans who were pissed off at the possibility that the fight was going to be canceled. Because of Escobedo not wanting to fight him is why they were booing.
I agree. Escobedo
That's
was the
exactly
best
what happened. Yeah, and which he wasn't. I think he's more almost, you know what, I'm not calling him a bad guy, don't take me wrong. He's almost a bad guy for actually taking the fight, in my opinion, but he had to do what was best for him. Take the money.
It's
a pretty smart move. You have a family, you know, get that money.
You know, the burner is that Broner thinks he's Mayweather so much. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure you guys remember. You guys are, you know, boxing experts. But Mayweather pulled this same stunt on Juan Manuel Marquez when they fought. He came in way over.
Oh, yeah.
And if you notice, Broner is trying to be an exact replica of Floyd Mayweather, which he is not. I mean, he's got the same defense, the same kind of style, but he gets touched way more than Mayweather. And to his defense, he's only 22, so he might get better. I'm pretty sure he will get better. But the only difference was that Broner, this little stunt almost backfired on him, and it almost caused Golden Boy himself, that everybody that's employed, it almost caused him a lot of money. So he should be very, very happy that Oscar De La Hoya threw the kitchen sink at Escobedo to keep this fight alive. Because if not, we'd be singing a whole different tune if this fight wouldn't have went through today.
Exactly, and you know, in a little bit of Mayweather's defense, the thing with Marquez is I think it was a little different because at least he wasn't getting 10, 15, 20 pounds over, and, you know, it was a catchweight 144. He was 3 pounds over, but he fought at the regular welterweight limit at 147. But unlike Broner, he didn't go and blow up to 148. Well, in Mayweather's case, it would have been 160.
Yeah, but what you got to understand is – Marquez at that point was jumping up I don't know how many weight classes. So he was already a blown-up little guy to come in the first place. And Mayweather was just trying to beat Marquez so he could prove that he's better than Pacquiao, which
right.
Well, actually, since Pacquiao's last couple fights, I do believe now Mayweather will beat him because, I mean, in my eyes, Pacquiao looks like he's not the same guy anymore. But that's really what, you know, people don't see these things, and a lot of people have to open their eyes. And I think what needs to happen is fighters need to get cracked down on more when they don't make the weight, because now they're basically almost saying it's okay, don't come, you know, don't make your weight, you're just going to get fined whatever $60,000 they fine Broner, which, I mean, in a fight when, you know, the money fighters make, $60,000 is nothing to them. That's like $600 to guys like
yeah,
that.
You're exactly right. I agree with just about everything that you've said. Hey, Fabian, great call. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks a lot, guys.
So before we move on with the boxing fix and the rest of the show, we are going to take one more caller on for right now. Remember, you can call in, area code 347-215-7598. We're going to take Sal onto the program right now. We'll just talk about a couple things, last night's fights and Kong versus Garcia. Sal, thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen. Yeah, I just want to say about Adrian Broner, too many prima donnas in the fight game today.
Amen.
We don't want rock stars. We want fighters, people of courage and determination and fortitude. And I think he is a disgrace to boxing. I think that some of these fighters think that they're bigger than the sport itself, and they need to be held accountable and put in their place. If the commissions aren't strong enough, the promoters aren't strong enough, I don't know, maybe some way that he's got his constituents, you know, his fans, Adrian Broner, but I despise him. He's a punk. He's literally a punk. I don't like his shenanigans in the ring after he knocks somebody out, and he has this really obese guy brushing his hair. Come on, it may be a Gorgeous George kind of thing. You know, it may be a Gorgeous George, but, I, you know, for purists like ourselves, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. I wouldn't even pay to see him get his ass whipped. I listen to him because I don't want to enrich this guy. That's how much I despise him. He's a punk.
But that obese guy is also his father, which I find it hilarious that Adrian Broner's tip-top shape, and that's his father. That's classic.
That's his father?
You know something? Just to play the devil's advocate here, Adrian Broner is bigger than the sport, and the stars are bigger than the sport. These guys can get away with anything next to murder, and I'll tell you exactly why. The money that Vicente Escobedo got last night, that's not coming from him. It's not out of Broner's paycheck. It's essentially from the promoter just to salvage the fight so they still make a profit off of everything. Granted, they're not going to be happy with Adrian Broner. It's a bit of a public relations fiasco, if you will, and they're not going to want to have to deal with that. No PR guy does. But all in all, Floyd Mayweather, Adrian Broner, if you're a star in this sport, you get your way for anything. Everything from contract negotiations, you know, songs you want to come into, to, hey, at this point you can weigh in on whatever thing you want. The commissions need to crack down because, quite honestly, these guys are bigger than the sport. They've proved time and time again that they can do just about anything they want, still get away with it, and still have paydays. Take David Haye and Derek Chisora. They act like a bunch of punks, a bunch of clowns, and look what happens. They get a good fight, they make a lot of money, they sell out Upton Park in the United Kingdom, and everything's okay again. See, to me, that's not right, but that just serves as proof that these guys are bigger than the sport and the laws that are supposed to carry out justice.
And let me say this, you know, as, you know, just like, you know, what you're saying and what the caller's saying, you know, I do like the old school way, but I'm a bad guy at times. I love to see the flashy stuff, but he's gone too far. And I believe that when you're unprofessional, when you're unprofessional and not make the weight, that means you should actually have to act extra professional during the fight. Now, with that being said, and I know this has nothing to do with boxing so much, but the fact that I became a Broner hater now is because he brought out the worst rapper ever in the world, Waka Flocka, with him, and I never want to see that again. If I ever have to see that again, I will stop watching every Broner fight ever again. That was just horrible. I'd rather hear Broner rap his way to the ring.
Who would you rather see walk into the ring with a fighter? Waka Flocka Flame with Adrian Broner or Justin Bieber with Floyd Mayweather? Which
Justin
is the worst
Bieber.
Capital crime?
I'd rather watch Justin Bieber.
That's a strong statement. I'm gonna have David Chen, who's working with us on the soundboard. I wanted to take this show, just cut out that one line, and at some point I'm gonna use that against you if I ever want to start some sort of a campaign to get you off this show. That's the perfect line. Hey, Sal. What did you want to talk about, Congress, before we let you go?
Just one more question. Thank you, John. Just one more. Again, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to chime into your show last week about Amir Khan and Garcia. Any thoughts? I was very disappointed. You know, there's been a lot of speculation about him being a flash in the pan, overrated, knocked out once again. What thoughts? What about his future? Or even the legitimacy? Was he really, do you think he really was the fighter that he was being touted as? Or just was he just another flash in the pan?
I thought that Garcia looked really good. And you know something? I'm one of the ones who's not coming down all that hard on Amir Khan. To me, Amir Khan showed a lot of heart. Yes, he was knocked out. Yes, he doesn't have a great chin. But he had a reputation as being one of the best in the world for a reason. He showed that in a lot of fights. Now, I thought that heading into his match with Zab Judah, Zab was incredibly overrated, and people gave him way too good a chance to win. But I was still very impressed with Amir Khan. I think he's a good fighter, and even though he may never be the best in the division, he's not going to carry the torch from Mayweather and Pacquiao at some point in a few years. There's a lot of interesting matchups that can be made with him. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, you know, first of all, to just answer Sal's question, I wouldn't say he's shot or anything. I'm one of the ones that believe he needs to move on and get a new trainer. And it's not a knock on Freddie Roach. I just think Freddie Roach, who is an offensive-minded type coach, isn't the one for Amir Khan. But I do. I couldn't believe. I was shocked with what happened. But it was. I think it was exciting and great. And as far as what you were saying, Joel, yeah, I pretty much agree. I think there's a lot of different matchups, and I think a lot of different matchups for most fighters or both fighters now. With Khan losing, I threw out there a match with him and Victor Ortiz would be a hell of a fight. It'd be a great fight. And Garcia, I mean, I think he has a lot of options now. Good for him, because I think he's someone who's been under the radar, and it's about time he gets a little bit of exposure, because I've even knocked on him.
Oh, yeah, Garcia is great. These are the type of performances that put you on the map. If you just take a look at the junior welterweight division right now, just off the top of my head, guys like Khan and his promoters, they're going to want to keep him away from people like Lucas Matisse and anyone that's got great power punches like that. But there's still some really good fights. If you want to keep him domestic, which he says he doesn't want to do because he was so offended by the fact that nobody came to see him in the UK. They don't really follow him anywhere. Guys like Paul McCloskey. There's just so many good fights that can be made with Amir Khan that I don't think he's shot at all. Have him move up a little bit and fight Kell Brook. That's a fight that'll generate interest in the United Kingdom for sure, even though Khan doesn't necessarily draw that well. It's just a really interesting fight. And you know what? I'm not convinced that his chin is as bad as everyone says it is either, because Brady's Prescott is a very good puncher, and he's just far from a glass chin. You know what I mean? He doesn't have a great chin, but he's not one of those guys who you put him in with a power puncher and he's just going to get shot because, I mean, look at some of the punches Lamont Peterson landed on him. And also,
well, Maidana, too.
Yeah, Maidana. And look at the way when Danny Garcia was pelting him in that fourth round, the way he refused to go down, I mean. He just has the heart of a champion.
Well, let me ask you guys this. He moves up to 147. Now, we know he can get hurt. He might not have that glass chin that's going to break him and he's going to fall to the ground. But he does get hurt, obviously. We've seen him staggered. You know, even with Garcia, he took it, but he was staggered. You can't deny that. Imagine at 147, though, with a heavier guy. Do you think his chin will be able to hold up and stand up with the power from a 147?
It depends. Styles make fights, and it's all about matchmaking. That's the way I look at it. There's a lot of enticing fights for Khan out there.
One more thing, gentlemen, and I really appreciate your sage, you both boxing maven. Do you think that it's an issue with him? As you said, in trainer, I know Roger Mayweather's really done. Floyd is a very brilliant defensive fighter, in the vein of Adrian Broner with the shoulder and so forth. Do you think that maybe Amir Khan, because he likes to scrap. He's a scrapper. You know, he's a tough guy. He's really talented, but he likes to fight perhaps more than he should be boxing. Do you think that's an issue with him, that perhaps he likes to throw caution to the wind a bit more than he should be doing, Amir Khan?
Definitely. That's definitely. I believe that. That's what I was saying about Freddie Roach. I think he needs to realize. I think he needs to take time out, watch his fights, and actually realize, damn, maybe I shouldn't be trying to brawl with these guys. That's not. You know, he's a lot better when he tries to box and moves around the ring. He looks almost unbeatable at times when he uses his speed and quickness and comes at different angles and circles the ring. That's when he looks his best. But when he stands in there in the pocket with these guys and trades shot for shot, that's when we've seen him get hurt and get knocked down. You know, so I think he needs to realize he's not a barn burner.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, Sal, thanks a lot for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks,
and
gentlemen.
Participating
Appreciate
in the boxing
it.
Picks.
Have a good night, gentlemen. Bye.
You too. I remember, at any point in the show, you can call in 347-215-7598. But for now, we're going to hold off on the callers, at least for a little while, until we get our next guest on. Coming on in about 10 minutes, let's forget the analysis on these fights until later on in the program when we get into a more in-depth. But just to finish off the boxing picks, A.J. Bernal in the featherweight division picked up a unanimous decision win in what was essentially a bounce-back fight, sort of a tune-up against Ruben Manakain in the Philippines. Friday night here, Saturday over there when that fight went on. Also on that card, sorry, that's actually not on that card, my bad, onto a different sheet, on Mexican television, Hidalgo Rue, Mexico, Pablo Cesar Cano got a technical decision in round number 7 over to Johan Perez. Perez was previously undefeated. He drops to 15-1-1 with 12 knockouts. Cano improves to 25-1-1 with 19 knockouts with his victory. And then Elvin Ayala at Mohegan Sun on Saturday night. You may recognize that name from a few fights that he's had. He's been around for quite some time. He's fought Sergio Mora in a fight that a lot of people thought Elvin actually won. He came back in Uncasville, Connecticut, and picked up a victory over John Mackey, a TKO in round number 9. And also in Mexico, in Tijuana, Jorge Paez Jr. picked up a victory over Omar Chavez, unanimous decision in round number 10, 96-94 across the board for the vacant WBC International Silver light middleweight title. In the super featherweight division, Brian Vasquez improved to 29-0 with 15 knockouts, defeating Jorge La Sierva. Any quick thoughts on those before we move on?
I almost missed that fight and not watched it at all, and I ended up catching most of it. I still haven't fully watched it, the Paez one and Chavez. The reason why it made me, I had to find a link or someone that had it, is because I saw a tweet from Sweet Boxing that we will have on earlier about Omar Chavez talking about he thought he won the fight and all that. So, and he wasn't even close. So I had to make sure I watched that fight. And yeah, I don't know what Chavez is thinking.
Yeah, it was an interesting way that he chose to fight, to say the least. But we're going to get into more recaps about that. But for now, we absolutely need to move on with the show. Starting with Friday night at the Chumash Casino in Santa Ynez, California. In the lightweight division in the main event, Art Hovhannissian, the Armenian, picking up a split decision win over Miguel Acosta in a fight that was very, very close. Hovhannissian improves to 15-0-2 with 8 knockouts. The scores were 95-93 for Acosta and 96-92 95-93 for Hovhannissian, 96-92 for Acosta, and 95-93 for Art Hovhannissian, who picks up the win. Acosta was down in the very first round. Very good shot that knocked him down. And then in round number 5, Hovhannissian went down, and the momentum started to swing back in Miguel Acosta's favor. But Acosta's not the fighter that he once was. He's not the same guy that fought Brandon Rios. You can tell he's got some battle scars. And while he was still a very good opponent, I think the Miguel Acosta of 2 years ago would have been able to beat Art Hovhannissian. Hovhannissian's somebody who's gotten a lot of praise, and he deserves it. But to me, I thought that even though Acosta did his best to make him fight his fight, and he did at times, Hovhannissian was not active enough. And there were times when Acosta could have been put away, or at least the scorecard could have been widened. And he just didn't take those chances. I was a little bit disappointed in Hovhannissian's performance, to be quite honest.
As was I. Shout out to Glendale, California. man, I think first of all, before I forget, I wanted to say this about that fight, and especially the post-fight, is Ronda Rousey's hot. Okay, and anyways, yeah, I thought if Acosta would have got that shot, if that shot landed on Acosta earlier in that first round, man, Acosta would have been done, man. That shot was vicious from Hovhannissian. But after that, it wasn't much of an impressive performance, and Acosta got him, didn't hurt him, but that knockdown, it was a knockdown. So, it did swing. That's what it was. It wasn't a shot that hurt anybody, but it was a shot that swung the belt into a whole other direction. And good, shot. I think Acosta was impressive more than Hovhannisian, which was this fight was supposed to be for Hovhannisian to, impress everybody and show who he is.
Yeah, I score all the fights that are on TV on FightJudge.com. You should check that out. Definitely do. It's a fun interactive site where you can post all your scores and score round by round. And just by looking at that, I mean, you could make a case that the majority, just based on the statistics here, the majority thought Acosta won rounds 5 through 9, as did I for the most part. Whereas the early rounds were won by Hovhannisian, but the difference, of course, being the knockdown that Hovhannisian had in the first. And towards the final rounds, when Hovhannisian really picked it up, especially in round number 10, which was a great round for him, this fight was very even. 43% of people on Fight Judge thought the fight was a draw. The other 57% for Hovhannisian. I never would have scored it for Acosta. I don't think you could really make too good a case for it, besides 1 point. But it was still, I think, the split decision is fair. It's fair from the sense that Hovhannisian really didn't blow him out of the water. It was a very close fight. I had it for Hovhannisian, but just barely.
Yeah, I also had it for Hovhannisian, but in rather than looking at wins or loss, he lost the fight as far as losing, people enjoying him and feeling that he has potential to be a superstar or more of a not superstar, more of a contender.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Still a very good fight, though, for at least for Miguel Acosta. You can get another payday out of it because he didn't look absolutely abysmal. But
right.
He is becoming a bit of a shell of what he once was, and the time is perhaps there closing in on him, if you will. And for Art Hovhannisian, where does he go from here? Because he is relatively old.
Okay. He's probably be like these little gatekeepers, just testing out these young fighters like he just did. I think that would be a perfect spot for him too, because he gets a payday. But yeah, he can still shock people. Apparently,
he used to be a top sparring partner for Manny Pacquiao back in 2009 and 2010. He definitely has skills, but I'm just not sure how far up the lightweight ladder he can go. I think into the borderline top 10 is going to be about as far as he can get. I don't see him beating John Molina. A fight with Richard Abreu may be interesting, or with guys like Kevin Mitchell and people from overseas, there's some interesting bouts, or Ricky Burns. But the thing is, those are fights that I think are unrealistic because Hovhannisian hasn't established himself as any sort of a draw or a big name. He's not a guy who gets a whole lot of publicity. And just going overseas to fight doesn't really make all that much sense either. Mm-hmm. So when you look at guys who fight stateside, I mean, who's really there for him? I think Jason Litzau is somebody that at some point we may see Hovhannisian in the ring with. Other than that, though, I'm just not sure there's a whole lot of enticing fights or really winnable fights that could possibly be made that's in an upper echelon in the division, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not like his fellow Armenian, Vic Darchinian, where Darchinian was a pretty vicious fighter for a while. So, I don't know. I mean, I can see that Litzau one. But, yeah, like you said, there's not too many in that division that can catch anybody's attention and say, wow, he beat this guy. But where he can actually beat him, I don't think he has a chance with a lot of people.
On the undercard, there was also a very good fight. Morales versus Santiago. I enjoyed the fight. I actually heard a lot of people dissing that, and I didn't think that that was completely fair. It was a blowout on the scorecards, 80-71, 79-72, 80-72 for the still undefeated Roman Morales. He improves to 11-0 with 6 knockouts, defeating Alexis Santiago. But it was enjoyable. They had some good exchanges. What did you think of Morales?
I like Morales. He looked good. I actually had something that I wanted to. It was more Alexis Santiago and being with Roger Mayweather. When I think what round was it that Santiago got dropped?
Round three.
I think it was the third round, right?
Round number three.
Yeah. After that, Roger says, "You fought a good round. That was a good round." I was like, "Man, is Roger losing it? Like, is he not seeing that his board just got knocked down?
That's the thing. He was not fighting a very smart fight, and his corner is very much to blame for it, I thought. And then, granted, Mayweather's a very good trainer, but I'm just not sure what was going on with the advice that he was giving him praise that he didn't necessarily deserve and praise that just wasn't going to help his fighter. I understand that fighters react to things in different ways, but to me, the way I look at it, I think just about every fighter on the planet, if he's being told he's doing a great job, then he's just going to keep doing what he's doing.
Right.
And that's not the way Santiago could afford to fight. And now, granted, I think even if he changed his style and fought differently, I think he was still going to lose. But regardless, I just don't understand what they were telling him in his corner, because it just did not add up. It was stupid.
Yeah, I totally, and that's kind of my point is, you know, regardless, he probably still would have lost. But, dude, like, you keep telling him you're doing your good job, you're finding a good fight, but really he's not. He's going to continue to do the same thing. He's not going to learn.
Yeah, I totally agree. Very disappointing from that aspect for Santiago. But all in all, I thought Morales looked all right. Jonathan Maciello in the lightweight division improved to 17-0 with 10 knockouts, defeating the journeyman Daniel Attah TKO in round number 3 of about, scheduled for 8 rounds. The stoppage coming at 2:45. The referee Lou Moret jumped in to stop the fight. Maciello looked solid to me.
Yeah, he did look solid. It was especially against Daniel Attah. I've seen Attah fight, I think, before. This is the same guy. But, yeah, Jonathan Marcello. How do you say it? Marcello?
Marcello.
Marcello.
It wrong the first time.
He looked very solid.
Yeah, he did look good, although at this point I'm not really sure what Daniel Attah brings to the table.
Right.
He's lost 6 of his last 7 fights, hasn't won since when you think about it, June of 2011 doesn't sound all that bad, but when you think that he's lost 5 in a row since June of 2011, all against good fighters, though. Anthony Peterson, Luis Ramos Jr., Miguel Vasquez, Marcello, Roman Martinez. He's lost to Antonio DeMarco in 2010 and 2008 to Urbano Antion. He lost to Nate Campbell in 2004, Asileño Popo Freitas in 2002. Okay. He's lost to so many good guys. I mean, all of his wins, at least they're against legitimate opponents. But at age 35, I just don't really see what Attah brings to the table, because I don't even think he's that good at test for fighters anymore.
Right. But for Marcello, it's just the way he handled him, too, and took him out and with the that right hand and just countering him all day. He put on a great performance.
He did. So at this time, we are going to bring into the program our first guest of the evening, Andrew Hernandez, coming on the show. Andrew, thanks a lot for coming on the Boxing Fix tonight.
Thank you for having me.
What's going on, Andrew? I'm Josh from the Boxing Fix, man. So first of all, you know, a lot of people out there who don't know who you are, you know, you're an upcoming young prospect. Tell everyone about yourself, man, and, you know, and how you got started in boxing.
Yeah, definitely. I'm up and coming. I mean, I'm undefeated, 5 professional fights. And I got started, you know, back in 1999, 13 years ago. My grandfather, you know, he competed in the amateurs, won some, you know, state championships, local titles, things like that. So he was kind of, you know, my inspiration to get started in boxing. And, you know, I've been doing it ever since.
Nice, nice. Now, you're from Arizona, and are you good friends at all with Jose Benavides?
Yeah, I'm actually real good friends with him.
Now, has he kind of been, you know, because he's a pretty top prospect now and everything coming up in boxing. Has he been like a big brother to you at all, like a mentor in any way?
You know what, I grew up with him in the amateurs and his father, and yeah, I definitely, admire what he's done at such a young age, and definitely his father. You know, his father's still somebody that I talk to and have a good relationship with, and he's a very good mentor.
Now, you fought, as Josh mentioned, you fought just about everywhere: Canada, the United States. You last fought on May 26th. You picked up a unanimous decision, a shutout across the board on all 3 judges' scorecards against Tichel Strauss, who came into the bout with a record of 2-1. Have you had any negotiations for your next fight?
Yes, I actually have. I'm fighting August 4th in Las Vegas at the Texas Station. It's another top-ranked card. You know, I'm very fortunate to be working with them, Team Benavidez, my manager, Gary Cheatham, and, you know, the whole top-ranked, you know, promotions. I mean, they've been amazing to me, and it's really great to be working with them.
Do you know anything about your opponent yet? And if you don't know about him now, how quickly can you realistically expect to know about the opponent in time to train for him?
You know what? I've watched film on him. I to be honest with you, I'm really bad with names. I don't remember his name, but I've seen footage on him. You know, I watched him. I can't remember if he's a local from Vegas, but he has a pretty decent record. He's a you know, big puncher. But, you know, we've been trading accordingly, and, you know, I don't see the fight going the distance. You know, I've been training very hard, and I do know that, you know, I'm ready for anything he's willing to give me in the ring, and I prepared myself, you know, the right way, and I wouldn't be, you know, settling for anything less than a knockout victory.
Now, Andrew, you know, one of the first things I noticed, and a lot of the people listening, they should, once they check you out, they'll probably notice too, is unlike some fighters that, you know, have easier fights early in their career with, you know, those gimme fights, you have a few fights, man, that you fought fighters that were undefeated as well, kind of like you on the come up. And not only that, you fought like in their hometown, like in Canada. Now, does that help your confidence as a young prospect, knowing you haven't had those gimme fights and that you fought some pretty really good competition that were on your level?
Yeah, I definitely do think that helps my confidence, especially when not only I'm fighting top competition in their hometowns, but I'm also beating them. You know what I mean? Like I said, I'm undefeated in five fights, so, you know, I haven't lost. And, you know, I plan on keeping it that way. But, yeah, it definitely helps my confidence when I'm able to go into a guy's backyard, and not only, you know, not only people's hometown in the United States, but, you know, like you said, the two undefeated guys in Canada went in their hometown, and, you know, I was able to look real good, real sharp, and it was hard. I mean, being there, because you're not only fighting a guy, you're fighting, it's like you're fighting a country. You know, when they know you're from the States, and they, you know, everything starts going a lot different, the way they treat you, you know. But I will say, for the most part, when you do, you know, put on a good performance and a good show, you do get the respect for it after the fight.
That's what I was going to ask you. You know, you brought it up saying, you know, how they treat you and everything. Do you get extra nervous, or what's the feeling like fighting outside of Arizona, like when you go to Canada?
You know what? I mean, like, I mean, you're going to feel something. I mean, if you... You know, if you're human, you should feel something, whether it's anxious, you know, nerves, you know, just, you know, anxiety, whatever it is, you're going to feel something. And, you know, I really do feel like I was born to do this. You know, I really feel like, you know, I was born to entertain people, and this was my gift to box and compete. And, you know, I'm blessed to be able to do it. And just that motivation, you know, going my amateur background, I had 111 amateur fights. You know, I've only lost 9, and I'd say half of those, you know, they probably robbed me. But, you know, I've been to nationals several times. So, you know, I've been traveling, you know, since I was very young. And I've had that experience to, you know, fight other places where you don't have family or that hometown crowd behind you. So, you know, you learn how to deal with those adversities. And I really learned how to deal with those type of things at a young age. So to answer your question, I mean, you know, it comes with the territory, and I'm kind of got used to doing it.
Now, you've done a lot of charity work. You recently did some with the Sunshine Group Home. What exactly is the Sunshine Group Home, and what did you do for them?
They're underprivileged boys. They range from 8 to 16 years old, and they all are in, you know, a foster home, a group home. And they, you know, they've been abused in their homes growing up and things like that. And, you know, it's just real unfortunate to, you know, I mean, I had a rough childhood. Everybody, you know, there's people that, you know, come from, you know, the projects and just a poor, you know, upbringing. But these kids, I mean, weren't even that fortunate. I mean, they grew up with a lot more problems being abused in their homes. So that's something no kid should have to go through. And, you know, I wanted to let them know you know, that I come from, you know, a real strong, you know, background, and my upbringing was tough, but I just wanted them to know, like, you know, you can't give up hope. You can't, you know, let your dreams die. You gotta work hard. You know, life is hard. It's always going to be hard, and things aren't easy, and they've had a rough life, you know, as young as they are, but if they can put that behind them and get, you know, stay strong, there's you know, light at the end of the tunnel.
Now, I just mentioned the Sunshine Group Home, but you do a lot of other charity work as well. I've even been told that you jump at the chance to do anything with just about any charity out there.
Yeah, I definitely do. You know, I feel like I said I've been really blessed and fortunate to be where I'm at and competing in boxing and just my life in general. You know, I like to give back, and people that don't have those chances, you know, I like to do anything I can to help them out.
Now, Andrew, your nickname is the Hurricane, and you're from Arizona, which is probably right now 150 degrees out there. How'd you get that nickname?
You know, just that, you know, the national tournaments I go to, a lot of people were like, man, you know, when you throw them combinations, you know, it's like a hurricane. Like, you know, you kind of, everybody feels them. Even when you're outside the ring watching, you know, you feel the guy's pain. But, you know, it kind of just stuck with me. And, you know, it went nice with the last name, same syllables, same amount of letters. So, you know, I kept it. It stuck with me, and I like it.
All right, now you talk about all the national tournaments and stuff. You know, we're going to probably talk about this later on in the show. You got the U.S. Olympics coming up, and do you know any of the fighters? And what do you think of the chances of the U.S.?
You know what? The U.S. always puts together a very strong team. You know, I think they're going to do well. I think they'll do decent. But, I mean, I know a lot of the older guys, like, you know, the 2000, 2004, 2008 teams. But this year, yeah, there's a lot younger guys and people coming up. And, you know, I don't know too many of them personally, but, you know, I feel I've watched, you know, some of the guys that are competing, and I think that they do have a pretty promising career, not only in the amateurs but in the pros. But, you know, I'll definitely be rooting for them, Team USA all the way.
All right, Andrew, before we let you go, how can people find out more about your career? Is there a Twitter name or a Facebook page where they can find out more about you?
Hurricane Hernandez. I'm on Facebook. You can find me, you know, on Facebook. I can't even remember my link, to be honest with you. But, yeah, I have a Facebook. If you just Google Hurricane Hernandez, my link will pop up. You can go on there. I mean, it lets you know what I'm doing in my camps, how hard I'm training every day, when my upcoming fights are going to be against who, and things like that. And you get to kind of see me more on a personal level. You get to see, you know, the type of charity work I do, my PR company, and just people like that. You just get to see, you know, you get to see me on a more personal level.
All right, Andrew, thanks a lot for coming on the show with an undefeated record of 4-0-1. You're not just a good up-and-coming fighter, but with all the charity work and everything else, you're a great guy. Boxing needs a lot more people like you. Thanks for everything you do for the community, and thanks for coming on the Boxing Fix tonight.
No problem. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate it.
Now, Joel.
Yes.
Joel, real quick, just to let everyone out there, to find him, I just got the message on exactly what it is. You can go on Facebook. I think it might be like /Hurricane Boxing. You can also go www.hurricaneboxing.com. So that's where everyone out there want to find out more and, you know, check out and follow Andrew's career. Check that out.
All right. Be sure to do that. Now, we have some more fights on Friday night. We talked about them a little bit in the in our Boxing Blitz segment, but at the Edgewater Casino in Laughlin, Nevada, on ESPN2. In the super featherweight division, Juan Carlos Burgos picked up a victory over the previously undefeated Cesar Vasquez, a TKO 1 minute and 50 seconds into round number 3 for the WBO Latino super featherweight title. Burgos improves to 30-1 with 20 knockouts. An impressive performance for Burgos and a quick, decisive ending early in the bout not a lot of people saw coming.
Sorry about that. Just got a funny message right now. But anyways, yeah, that was an impressive fight. I really liked that fight, even though it was, you know, like I said earlier, it was a quick fight. But Burgos looked good, and I've always liked him. You know, he's always been an exciting fighter to watch. You know, it was a big risk. Like, I think Teddy or one of them said how it was a big risk because of the fact that he's a ranked fighter fighting an undefeated unranked fighter, you know, that's never fought in the U.S. before. And he showed up. I mean, like, that first round, I was like, wow, like, Vasquez was landing some shots, but Burgos came in and did his job in that third round and hurt him. Devastating punch, I thought. But to give some props to Vasquez, man, he didn't fall down. He took it.
Oh, yeah, he absolutely took it. Well, with a record of 25-0 with 16 KOs entering into the bout, it was odd not seeing him as the favorite, because if you had just looked at the records, you would think, wow, this Vasquez could be pretty great. But he's fought a slew of nobodies, and a slew of nobodies exclusively in his native Mexico. So he was not... I question whether or not he really was a really formidable opponent to Juan Carlos Burgos. Now, I'm not saying that to take anything away from Burgos at all. Don't get that idea. But we knew so little about Vasquez coming in that while I understand how it could be a dangerous fight for Burgos, I don't want to make too much out of it because I still don't know what to think of Vasquez.
Right. You know, you don't know what you think about Vasquez, but Burgos, I mean, we've seen a lot of him before. And regardless of not knowing too much about Vasquez, we know that he fought in Mexico and he fought in street fights, and we know it's not sometimes it's not that easy to knock out Mexican fighters. So for him to do that, you know, I think I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, I was not unimpressed, but you never know with guys that just come out of the unknown like that. On the welterweight division, Aaron Martinez shut out Prentice Brewer, a split decision, 77-75 Martinez, 77-75 Brewer, 77-75 for Martinez. Judge Tim Cheatham, who scored about 77-75 for Brewer, that was just an awful scorecard. That made no sense, and Teddy Atlas, rightfully so, called him out for it on the telecast. It was far from the worst that I've ever seen, but I don't understand how you could really have this fight much more than 77-75, or even a draw seems a bit out there to me.
Yeah, I already kind of said what I about the judges. I'm going to try to not talk too much about that, but it was a great fight. Not for Brewer, obviously. You know, Brewer just didn't look like he wanted to be in the fight, in my opinion. He hardly threw any punches at certain points of the fight. It almost looked like he was bored, like he was, not that his opponent wasn't good enough, that he just wasn't ready for a fight, period. That's how I took it. You know, I don't even know what to say too much about it. I thought Martinez won clearly. I don't know how any of the judges did it at 77-75 for Brewer. I gave Brewer one round. I almost gave him the second round, but I thought Martinez still pulled that off. That's how I looked at it. Good job for Martinez. But, man, you know, how sickening is that for a fighter that you know you won the fight, and to hear it was a split decision, you're like, oh, shoot, I might lose this fight, you know?
Yeah, it's always that nerve-wracking moment when you hear it's a split decision in a fight like that. I had it 77-75 for Martinez. I agreed with judges Patricia Morse-Jarman and CJ Ross. As for Prentice Brewer, I was very impressed with Ronald Cruz when he fought Brewer, not the other way around. And to think that Brewer actually thought he beat him back on June 1st is an absolute disgrace in itself. I mean, he got blown out of the water. The scorecards were 118-110 for all three judges. He was shut out. He didn't look particularly good in that fight. And once again, had he just been a little bit more active, you never know what could have happened. But I picked Martinez to win that fight, and it didn't shock me at all when he came out the victor, although it should have been a unanimous decision and not a split decision. Two fighters making their professional debuts as well in the lightweight division. I was impressed with Vitor Freitas Jones, the great nephew of Asileño Popo Freitas. He picked up a KO in round number 2 of Araco Espinosa. And in the heavyweight division, Brett Rather had a successful professional debut against Terrell Woods, a unanimous decision, 40-36, 40-36, 39-37.
Big props to Popo's nephew. That was a good fight for him, like I said earlier. That was a vicious knock. You know, he took that guy out. Like, it was a guy who's been knocked out plenty of times in the first round, but like you also mentioned to me, you know, it's his debut. But he handled business, and I think that's the one most important thing. Like, I think when you fight guys that are prone to get knocked out or you know, or not or just opponent, that's your job, is to take care of business, not let it go the distance. Be impressive. Not shock the world. Impress the world. Impress boxing fans everywhere. Impress those boxing addicts. You know, so I definitely think that he looked really good. But the Brett Ratner, no way. Whatever his name is.
Yeah, he. It wasn't really extraordinary for either guy. So with that, we'll move into Saturday. But first, there's a lot of shows and a lot of great stuff from Leaving in the Ring that you guys are gonna want to be sure to tell to find out about. Josh, why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, no problem. You have Monday, Noche de Boxeo for all you Spanish listeners out there, Spanish speakers. Yeah, great show. They have it on Monday from 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. And then on Thursday, you got Leaving in the Ring Radio with host Dave Duenez and the Dark Club, Gabriel Montoya. 3 hours of boxing talk from 5 o'clock to 8. That's 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, and it's also 5 day because it's 3 hours. Amazing how that works out. And don't forget to go out and get your new Undisputed Fight magazine. You can go on UndisputedFightMag.com, purchase your magazine. It's a great issue. This new one's coming out. It's just a great magazine for you boxing addicts out there. You know, great articles from Joel, myself, David Chan, and a lot of others out there. Great, just great stuff out there.
Yeah, there's some very good stuff. So with that, we'll move to the U.S. Bank Arena in Cincinnati, Ohio, on HBO Boxing After Dark on Saturday night. The complete and utter disgrace that was Adrian, the weight-making problem, Broner, taking on Vincente Escobedo. Now,
brush
to start,
my hair.
To start things off. Yeah, exactly. To start things off, with the weigh-in on Friday, there was no talk that the bout wouldn't go on then after Broner gave up the title on the scales and weighed in 3.5 pounds over the 130-pound limit. However, on the day of, he weighed in at 143 pounds, 13 pounds above the super featherweight division limit, which was an absolute fiasco. And Vincente Escobedo, good for him for just his swift reaction to that garbage and saying, you know what, no, I'm not going to take this fight unless you pay up. And now with a young six-month-old child at home, he did what he had to do and he took the fight. But in a way, he's almost a tragic hero because it's not an opponent that he should have been in the ring with.
Yeah, he basically did say, I'm not going to fight you, fatty. it just sucks, man. It sucks for Escobedo. You know, you train hard, you work hard to make weight, you know, sweat blood, sweat and tears in training camp. And regardless, we all knew that Escobedo probably wasn't gonna win. And I understand that. But I can't stand people making that argument to me on Twitter, like, well, you know, Broner's gonna win anyways. That doesn't matter. It's the principle, and it's the right. Like you said earlier, he basically cheated. He knew he can get away with it, you know, and that's wrong. And, you know, Escobedo, I would have, like I said, if it was anybody else, I would have said not fight. But the fact that Escobedo does have that newborn kid, you know, recently married, and he's not ever going to make that kind of money probably ever in his career again. I guess I see where he's coming from, but other than that, man, if he had a bright future ahead of him as far as making that kind of money, I would have said no. I would have thrown it in the face and ruin everybody, because it's Golden Boy's fault just as much as Broner's fault, because Golden Boy, you know, hold his hand and feed him with a silver spoon in his mouth and let him get away with all that bull crap.
Yeah, I was very, very dismayed at Adrian Broner. And then the crap that he pulled after the fight, I didn't find it cute. I didn't find it funny. First of all, I'm glad that he only asked that girl to brush his hair. But if you looked at her expression, she didn't seem all that pleased by the gesture either. I mean, this is a guy who's very outspoken. Almost, I would like to say, too outspoken for his own good. But unfortunately, as we've seen, guys who are outspoken, that people will still buy their fights, whether they want to see him win or they just want to see him lose like they do with Floyd Mayweather. He's a Floyd Mayweather in training. Now, unfortunately, he's not quite popular enough to get away with the stuff that Mayweather does. And there's a lot of backlash in the boxing community outside of Cincinnati where the fight was held. But regardless, Adrian Broner just did not do himself any favors. Here's a guy who I honestly don't think he cares what people think of him. He's a showboat. He's come into the ring singing. and rapping his own song before. He's done that in the past. He's narrated sexual experiences on Twitter for the entire world to read. He's a complete and utter idiot. He's a punk. But outside of that, I know he was a lot bigger than Escobedo, but even had they been fighting at the exact same weight and not separated by another weight class or two, I still think the result would have been the same. And say this about Adrian Broner, he may be an annoying sort of guy like a Floyd Mayweather, very flamboyant, but he also is a very good fighter with a great skill set.
He is, and let me just touch on this. I know we're here talking about, we're supposed to be talking about the fights and stuff, but I just want to say this real quick, too, about Broner and stuff. You know, we all say he's the Mayweather in training. You know what the main difference is? Yeah, Mayweather does a lot of stupid crap, and I'm not defending him, so I don't want anyone to take me wrong. But Mayweather, I think, doesn't so pre-calculate a lot of things. I think Mayweather also just does stuff on the like, what's on his mind. Like, the stuff that he says, like, for instance, like the Larry Merchant thing, I honestly don't believe that he did that on purpose. He knew he was going to say that. You know, I think it was just emotion, and he came out. Broner has everything planned out. He knows what he's going to do because he wants the attention. He is an attention whore. That's exactly what he is. And he does, you know, before what he did with his girlfriend, who I wonder if that's the girl that he's been talking about on Twitter all the time. I'm just curious. She was
I don't want to know.
I'm curious, you know, okay. Like, hey. But anyways, he goes over, and I'm guessing it was his mom. He tells her something, and she, if you read her lips, she's like, don't do it. Don't do it. And I think his mom's ready. He probably kicks his ass all the time when he does all this stupid crap. But, you know, that's the thing, is he tries to act too hard, and that's what I hate. He's not, they say he is being himself, man. He's trying way too hard. And I'm tired of all these people defend, they're like, you know, I was somewhat one of them who would defend him before, but now he just took it to a whole nother level. You know, I understand that he's trying to get ratings, but he needs to remember this. He said he is like the Floyd Mayweather. Hey, he's still on HBO. He's not pay-per-view HBO. When he can get on pay-per-view, then let's start talking Mayweather. But at this time, Mayweather was already doing bigger things, in my opinion, than Broner.
Such a shame for Chente, because he really had no choice but to take the fight. But regardless, I think he will get another big opportunity, because the boxing fans, the boxing populace at large, looks at Escobedo as being the good guy and being the victim here. And that alone should be enough to at least warrant him, if nothing else, in either an ESPN Friday Night Fights appearance, although not this season anyway, because that's coming to a close in a couple weeks, or Showtime, or at some level, because he's also a pretty decent fighter, too.
Well, the one thing from what they're saying is he's going to get another shot at the same title anyways. So, I mean, that's a good thing. He has another chance to get the title, you know, and maybe it gives him bigger things to do. But he already has that automatic chance for that same title again.
Yeah, he does. Now, moving on to the undercard, we already talked a lot about it with the caller, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But Thurman Laura, I wasn't blown away by Thurman, although I would have loved to have seen Marcos Maidana in that fight instead of Orlando Laura. Who the biggest name on his resume is Paulie Malignaggi. But still, just give us a quick synopsis. Were you as unimpressed and really disappointed and annoyed in a way at some of the showboating in the ring as I was from Thurman?
No, not really. And I think he's doing all the showboating and stuff because he's fine. He's on TV and he's trying to get that exposure. You know, you gotta admit, no matter what, you know, especially American fans, we, as much as we say, there's people who love it and there's a lot of people who hate it, but, you know, hate is not necessarily a bad thing because it's going to get people to watch. So he's just trying to get a fan base out there. I'm not too upset at that. As far as being impressed with his skills, I don't know yet. Everyone's talking big hype about it, man. I was reading Twitter, everyone's, oh, look at Thurman, can't wait to watch Thurman. You know, I mean, was I entertained? Not too much. I wasn't entertained too much. I didn't see what was entertainment. I think he was crazy for calling those guys, all those fighters out. I think all those fighters he names, including Paulie Malignaggi, will school him, I think, right now. But I understand why he did that. Again, it's publicity. He's trying to get his name out there. And it kind of worked because Paulie tweeted out talked about him, calling him out a little bit, like literally probably 5 minutes after that happened. So he got what he wanted. He got people to talk, starting to talk about him and his name in the pot. So, you know, I think he did a smart job. But as far as a fighter, I'm not sure what you think of him. He looked kind of he was missing. He had certain tools he was missing defensive wise. Some of his punches he threw kind of looked sloppy at certain points in the fight.
Yep, in the lightweight division, Omar Figueroa runs his undefeated record to 19-0-1 with 15 knockouts, a victory over Dominic Salcedo. Salcedo had some very good moments early on in the fight, but after that, it was all Figueroa, a unanimous decision. I was impressed with Figueroa, not quite as much as Roy Jones Jr., but I was still very impressed with Figueroa and liked what he brought to the table against Salcedo, who's a pretty formidable opponent.
I liked Omar. I've liked Omar in his last few fights. I think he's a very talented young kid. I mean, the kid looks like he's only 13 years old in the ring. If you look at him, he looks like he barely hit puberty and he's fighting these guys. But I like him. He looked really good. He took a punch that I think a lot of people would have went down, and he fought back and won the fight pretty decisively. I think he still needs. There might be certain things he needs to work on still, but I see his skill level. I think he's very talented and he has heart and he's a strong kid.
Yeah, he is very strong, and I'll be excited to see more of him in the future. Hopefully, on a bigger stage than the undercard of an HBO fight that's not televised. By the way, before we leave the fights from Cincinnati, I do want to say this. The moment of the weekend for me in boxing was Michael Buffer, and I'm almost convinced it wasn't a mistake, when Michael Buffer at the end of the fight said climbing up the ranks is the number one welterweight, super featherweight. I don't think that was Michael Buffer making a rare slip up. I wonder if there was a little bit of a jab at Adrian Broner there, because you very rarely hear Michael Buffer mess anything up. And to say welterweight when Adrian Broner could have come awfully close to fighting at welterweight, it was just so humorous to me. I absolutely loved it. And a bit of a piece of truth there from the most iconic ring announcer boxing has.
Yeah, I did catch that too. That was pretty funny. It almost seemed like he was confused.
Yeah, I thought that more people would be lighting up about that on Twitter, but honestly, I don't think a whole lot of people were paying attention to it at that point.
I think too many people were still on the fact that what Broner did and Escobedo crying.
Yeah, very emotional and with good reason. But hopefully if there's karma and there's a boxing god, he's going to give Vicente Escobedo something very good in the future. Also an undefeated guy, Brandon Bennett, picked up a victory over John Nader. He improves to 14-0 with 7 knockouts, a unanimous decision win. So with that, we'll give you an opportunity to pitch the shows one more time, Josh, and then we'll bring on our next guest.
All right, well, on Monday, we got Noche de Boxeo, the Spanish version of, Leaving the Ring radio. It's boxing talk in Spanish, so all you Spanish speakers, check that out, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. Thursdays, we got Leaving in the Ring with host Dave Duenas and the Dark Cloud, Gabriel Montoya. You can check 3 hours of boxing talk, catch that, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. It's another great show with big things that they're doing coming up. They're doing a live radio show coming up on August 2nd, if I believe, from one of the gyms out in Oxnard. So that should be good. You can't wait for that. And then don't forget to get your Undisputed Fight magazine. You ain't a real box fan unless you got that Undisputed Fight mag. Go on UndisputedFightMag.com. Check it out. It's great. This month, this coming up issue, I'm not sure if it's out yet. It might be. I think it is, with Shane Mosley on the cover. It's a good story in there and a lot of other great stories. So make sure you go check that out.
All right, so with that, we bring on our next guest, Gabino Sainz, on the line with us. Hey, thanks a lot for coming on the Boxing Fix tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
What's going on, Gabino, man? You're another up-and-coming prospect, doing big things so far. First of all, I want you to just tell everyone about yourself, and what got you started in boxing?
My name is Gabino Sainz. Just turned 23 last month. Young upcoming junior featherweight, so 122 pounder, currently undefeated, 6-0, 5 knockouts, and I got interested in boxing. I started off doing karate. I know a lot of other boxers started off doing some type of martial arts as well, but I started doing karate at first when I was 6 years old, and competed on the national level, the world level. I won the world championships twice when I was like 11 and 12 in the Nationals and stuff, and just kind of got tired of it and just transferred over, really never liked team sports, and just transferred over to another individual sport, and boxing was a little similar to karate. I think karate helped me in boxing, so as far as like stance and stuff, like switching the southpaw and right-handed, but yeah, so I just switched over. It was a little natural more so than switching over to basketball or soccer, so and it worked, and I've been doing it ever since, so I've been boxing since I was 11, so the transition went well, and just been doing it and pushing and pushing.
Right. Now, and you're from Indio, California, correct?
Correct.
So are you good friends at all with Timothy Bradley?
Yeah, actually, Ray Bradley is my second trainer. My father, along with Ray Bradley, are my trainers. He does strength and conditioning as well as one of my core trainers in camp. So we were just together yesterday afternoon working out in practice. So I'm always talking to Tim and his father and stuff, and they give me words of encouragement and stuff. So it's good to have them there.
I've seen how Bradley, you know, does his strength and conditioning, man. How is it, you know, working out with him? You know, is it pretty intense?
Yeah, it's a different level, man. It's not. I don't think every athlete can take such a, I wouldn't say punishment, but it's mental. You know, he just strengthens you mental more than just as much as he does physical. He prepares you mental. So, and I think, you know, Timothy has shown that in his career, and especially with the last fight with the busted ankles and going all the rounds and finishing off strong. So just goes to show, you know, how strong your mind is.
Does that motivate you when you see stuff like that? Since you're good friends with Timothy Bradley, he goes in, fights Pacquiao, you know, fought a pretty good fight. It was a close fight, regardless on how you feel it went. But he fought through that broken ankle or the sprained, you know, the busted foot, everything, the busted ankle. Does that, you know, motivate you as a friend of his and everything?
Yeah, it motivates me. You know, you see so many boxers, some fight with injuries, some don't, you know, some give up, and some just continue to push and push. And, yeah, he motivated me. You know, he's like my older brother, so I see him as my older brother. And to see him fight through something like that, it motivates me. And that, you know, I did the same training that he does, so, you know, I might be just as in shape as he is. So, you know, if something comes up like that in a fight and I have to go through something like that, you know, I can – push myself and do the same.
Now, you have a bit of a karate background. Is there anything from that that's helped you and translated into being a good thing for you in terms of your boxing career, or are they two totally different martial art disciplines?
I think they're a little different, but they're both, you know, a contact sport, so not as much as, you know, boxing is, you know, full contact, but karate, there's still punches being thrown at you, not as much as in boxing, but there's still punches being thrown, you know, instead of being a stance. And so, yeah, I think it's helped me, you know, as far as balance maybe, and I switched southpaw and right-handed, so the transition is really pretty easy, because in karate I was actually a southpaw, so my right foot forward, and then when I switched over to boxing, that was kind of the wrong thing to do at the time, but now everybody's doing it, so... when I started off when I was 11, they're like, you put your left foot forward, and I was so used to keeping my right foot forward from karate. So, yeah, it helped. I would say so.
All right, now, what do you have scheduled for your upcoming fight? Anything?
Well, yeah, right now I have August 4th scheduled at the Texas Station in Vegas. It's a top-ranked card. I believe it's a Del Futura card, so we're just in training camp for that. I got one more week of hard training, and then going to go ahead and lay back the following week and just get ready for the fight.
Now, Guerrino, you gotta, you know, when you're training for these fights and stuff, you're in Indio, which a lot of people. I'm from California as well. I'm like in the LA area. Is it hard for you to find really good sparring in Indio? Because, you know, it's kind of out there in the desert and everything. Or do you travel a lot to get in your sparring?
You know what? It is, because a lot of the guys are heavy. But a lot of guys train in Indio, come down, like we said. I've been training in Indio and stuff. I did some sparring with him for my pro debut, but for this camp, I've been traveling to Maywood. Maywood's like I feel like it's my second home, and I travel there every weekend when I'm ready in camp, every other weekend, a couple times a week. So I've been getting good sparring over there with Abraham Lopez, Leo Milo, Miranda, Charles Huerta. So there's some tough guys over there, you know, they bring out the best of me.
Nice, nice. Now, you manage the gym out there, right? The Indios, the City of Indios gym?
Yeah, this September, we just had a grand opening for the City of Indio Team Center, and they made me the director of that. So at 22, being the director of a boxing club was pretty surprising, but, you know, I managed it, and I'm handling pretty well. So, so I just manage the kids during the day, and in the afternoon after I'm off of work, and I get to work in the gym and start training and getting ready for myself.
What exactly do you do with the kids there?
Just like any other gym coach, like coach and director. So I just coach the kids, start them off from the basics, you know, like every boxer. I think they do walk the line and, you know, do the mitts with them and do the conditioning with them. So just like a normal training area.
Nice, nice. Now, I heard in your last fight, you suffered an injury?
Yeah, I did. So and that's why I took so much time off. You know, it's been, I believe, like 6 months, or in August will be 6 months since I've competed. And, yeah, I suffered an injury in the second round. And, you know, so it's something I learned from, you know, like Tim, he fought through it. I fought through it as well. And, you know, I thought I did fairly well. So I got the injury taken care of. We're 100% now. And we're just ready to get back on the mat.
Now, what did you injure? Was it your hand?
No, I didn't injure my hand or anything. I don't want to say. It was just an injury, you know, and I just fought through, and I kept on pushing through it, and we took care of after the fight, and I'm going to be fine now. So it wasn't something severe, but something that I need to get rehabilitation on and stuff, and now everything's a lot better.
Well, now, since it's been a while, and, you know, since you fought, you know, this is like your comeback fight, you feel you got a lot of added pressure on you now? And coming off of the draw, too?
No, I've always had a lot of pressure on myself since the amateurs. You know, everybody's always expect a lot out of me, and I just, you know, I just beat me. Nobody else is fighting in there in the ring with me. I'm the only one come fighting that's going to be in the ring throwing the punches, receiving punches. And so I just got to do me what I've been doing since I was 11 years old.
Now, you're managed by Cameron Duncan, who's a very prominent name in the boxing industry. How has he been beneficial to your career? It's got to be great working with a guy like that so early when you've only had 7 fights.
Yeah, Cameron Duncan actually signed me before I had any fight. So for, you know, a great manager like that, like you're speaking about, to sign me before even seeing me have any professional experience, to have that confidence in me, to sign me was good. He's been great. You know, he's got me with Top Rank, one of the number one promotional company in the world, and had good stable fighters, and, you know, he's managing my career correctly, I believe, and I just have confidence in him that he'll just lead me to that world title shot.
Now, before we let you go, how can fans find more about you via social media and online?
You can go ahead and Top Rank has made a fan page for me on Facebook. I believe it's Facebook.com and Gabino Signs, and I also have a personal page you can add on there. And I pretty much keep updated with my fan page and my personal page, so they can just find me on Facebook, Gabino, Gabino, Signs, Saenz.
All right, Gabino, thanks a lot for coming on the show tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Okay, bye.
So we wish him good luck in his future endeavors. His professional record is 6-0. With one bout even, 5 wins coming by way of knockout, fighting out of Indio, California. Always great to get the prospects on the show. We're still going to have Ladin Biasi calling into the show as well. Now, with that, we're going to take a bit of a break from recaps of fights and move on to the United States Olympic boxing preview. Of course, the Olympics starting up. They've got some preliminary soccer matches that start even before the opening ceremonies on Friday in London, England. But definitely some great fighters to keep an eye on. First of all, before we really do a rundown of just about everybody, who stands out to you?
Well, it's obviously it's going to have to be the guy who's going for his third time, man. Rashid Warren definitely stands out to me. He has to be one of the favorites who medal, in my honest opinion, and I know this sounds, you know, like I'm putting a lot of pressure on him, but I think he has to win gold. I'll go silver. Anything less than silver, I'm not impressed. He. This is his third time out there, and he's got to do it. He's part of the guy that we've been talking about for a lot of the show, Adrian Broner's whole band camp team, too. So he's another fighter out of Ohio.
Absolutely. One guy who I really like, I mean, I love Jose Ramirez. Jose was very highly regarded amateur, has over 143 career amateur wins, 11 national titles. He's a very solid fighter, looks very, very good, and he has a very nice style, too. Hands held high, a little bit cautious at times, picks his shots very well, and in terms of the Olympic-style scoring, that's going to bode very, very well for him. I would definitely hope for a bronze medal, but the lightweight division is one of the most stacked in the Olympics, and that could certainly cause him some sort of trouble. Joseph Diaz at bantamweight is very, very good. Now, I mean, Diaz, here's a guy who looks like he's very, very young, and he is young. He's only 19 years of age, but he's got sort of the baby face, and I mean that in the most affectionate way possible. I have a baby face. It's a good thing, and he's had a very good amateur career as well. And you know something, if he pulls off an upset or two, he's not highly favored, but he could make it into some of the later stages. And outside of Cuba's very talented prospect, Lazaro Alvarez, he's got guys like England's Luke Campbell and Anvar Yunusov of Tajikistan. That's not a country you hear of every day. There's very tough fighters in that bantamweight division as well, but it's very possible that he could find himself with perhaps a bronze medal as well if he fights a very good style of fight and really puts absolutely everything into the performances, which I'm sure he will. Who else sticks out to you?
Another person that I like, and, you know, let's see. I'm sorry, I was just typing something right now. Marcus Brown, another good guy. He's a very talented fighter. I've been following him for a while now. In fact, I followed him because of Twitter. I got on Twitter and, you know, he was one of, you know, we talked on Twitter a lot and he started following his amateur career and stuff, and I've seen him a few times and he looked really good. And I think he has a real good shot at it. He's strong. He's fast. He's been through a lot. He's won multiple tournaments before. He looks like he can step up and do it. That's one thing about this year's amateur team is there's a lot of people that look like they have a lot of experience to help even the younger people up.
Yeah, he's very tall. He's 6'2" in the light heavyweight division. He's a southpaw, 3-time New York City Golden Gloves tournament winner, and the number one light heavyweight in the United States. He's pretty good, but I don't see him advancing all that far. There's definitely some flaws in his game. He's got a bit of a wide defense at times. And then last year's World Championships, he did knock out his first-round opponent, which knockouts are always very impressive, especially in amateur boxing. But in just the third round, he lost to Russia's Igor Mekonitsev, who's he's a talented fighter as well. But for Marcus Brown, I don't think he has quite what it takes in the light heavyweight division. Somebody really stands out to me, though, is Jamel Herring. He's 26 years old in the light welterweight division, which, when you think of amateur boxers, that's typically considered pretty old. He's a captain of Team USA, former United States Marine, served 2 tours of service in Iraq, won a silver medal at the World Military Games, and took the gold at both the 2011 and 2012 Armed Forces Championships. He's not projected by many to win many fights, but he's somebody who's a feel-good story, and at least from a personality standpoint, can really appeal to the American public, because we all love somebody who's a patriot, like Jamel Herring. Say this, he may not be the best fighter in the junior welterweight division, but he's an outstanding guy, and with his tours in Iraq and everything else, he's somebody that you know you're going to at least be hearing about on the telecasts, whether he makes it far or not.
Yeah, you know, I've heard a lot about him. I don't know too much about him yet, but I've heard a lot of good things, and I'm also excited to see him. But let me tell you this. I want to go out and say this. This is a dark horse who, and I'm going to admit, I might be a little bit biased because I've been able to cover him. This is when I actually met Gabriel Montoya. Was we were covering the LA Matadors, you know, it's a semi-pro league that was going on. And this is why I think Rasheed Warren has a good chance, especially this year. This my dark horse is Terrell Gusha. They fought in the Matadors. The Matadors didn't use headgear. They got hit hard. You know, they learned how to fight like pros, and I think that's going to help them a lot in the Olympics. the fact that they have that experience now. Now, I know and I hate the way the Olympic goes about scoring, the whole pity tap punches. Right. But I believe that the fact that they've done this professional type fighting now, you know, they've done five 3-minute rounds, 10-point scoring must system, just like the pros do, no headgear. They have an advantage, I feel. I think they can. That's going to help them out and benefit them. And that alone, plus in Terrell fight, I think he has talent. I think I'm not saying he's going to medal, but I think he has a good shot of being a dark horse and surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, we have some very, very talented fighters in this Team USA class. So with that, though, we're going to take a break from the Olympic preview. Remember, you can always call into the show at 347-215-7598. Our caller on the line right now, we like to call her the PR superstar, Emily. Thank you very much for I'll give Josh credit for that name. But thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for helping us book your fighters. What's on your mind?
No, thank you. Thank you guys for having them on. That's all. I enjoy your show a lot, and you know, I know a lot of people are listening. I sure appreciate you guys having Andrew and Gabino on, and they were both sent me texts afterwards just saying thank you so much again. So
Now, real quick, Emily, because you're trying to get off quick, and you know, you wanted me to give you a shout out. Now, I wanted to just say, you know, you're always helping us out, getting these guys on the shows, you know, telling me what to plug for them as far as their fan page. Mike, I got a question for you. What did you think about what you heard about the whole Broner situation, since we've been talking about that?
Well, you know, I was glued to Twitter all day that day, yesterday, I guess, trying to see what was happening, and I'm just disappointed in him. I really am. You know, I can dig a guy that's using, you know, some flashiness to get some, you know, attention. I'm all right with that. It's not my favorite way, but whatever, you know, it's your thing. And honestly, I feel like he really disrespected his opponent. He disrespected the sport. Coming in the next day still overweight, really, you know, further disappointing. The things he tweets after the fact, disappointing, disrespectful. And, you know, this is a sport where people are putting their lives on the line. And I just felt like he, you know, boxing for me is a lot about respect. And you respect your opponent. And then afterwards, the proposal, I think I mentioned this to you earlier when we talked on the phone. You know, I think I had heard that's how Vicente Escovedo proposed to his girlfriend, and I don't know if he was mocking that, and I just, it just grossed me out. Like, I didn't have beef with him at all. I thought he was cool. He was on our show last Tuesday, the show I'm on, the Max Boxing Show, and, you know, he seemed totally nice, and I thought, you know, this guy isn't anything like his public persona, but, man, I'm not a fan anymore, and I'm not going to sit there and watch his fight so he loses. I don't even care. Like, he just kind of grossed me out a little bit.
And not just the stuff he did after the fight, but the stuff he did before the fight, where, you know, posting pictures of Twinkies on Twitter. I mean, you could see this coming the whole way. He wasn't taking it seriously. And that just reeks of being an absolute scumbag. I don't even know other way to put it. But there's a fine line between somebody like Mayweather and somebody like Adrian Broner. I think Broner really crossed the line this time, and it rubbed just about everybody the wrong way.
You know, I was irritated when Mayweather didn't make weight against Marquez. I'm a huge Marquez fan. I thought that he used, you know, the fact that, of course, Marquez wouldn't back out, and he, you know, went with it. I wasn't happy, but this was just disgusting. Like, he doesn't have any right or any standing or anything else to pull his crap, and I don't know. Like, I really disrespect him now. I have no respect for him. I don't think, you know, the Twinkie thing, all of that, you know, yeah, you could see it coming, and I was like, this is all just, you know, show, whatever. And then to come in like that, and when I see kids all the time in the gym working their butts off, starving themselves, trying to get a shot that's 1/16th of the shot that this guy has, and then he's doing that stuff, and it just drives me crazy. I don't respect him anymore at all.
All right, well, Emily, thanks for actually coming on the show, finally getting your, you know, and thanks again for getting the fighters on. It was a great time having them on, too.
Thank you so much for having them on. I sure appreciate it.
All right, Emily. We'll Twitter beef later.
Yeah, I'm sure we will.
Emily Pandelake is helping us book some of those fighters on the show. Good to hear from her. Also, I think it's worth noting this, though. Her family did suffer a loss this weekend. She has an uncle in the hospital, uncle, brother, grandfather, son, lots of stuff going on in her family right now. So keep her and her entire family in your thoughts and prayers during this difficult time. I expressed a few weeks ago plenty of gratitude for the boxing community, how I'm always very pleased to see how the community steps up in times like this, and the tweets and the messages from people I didn't even know with their thoughts and prayers for my family out in Colorado that were threatened by the wildfires out in Colorado Springs. Boxing has absolutely fantastic people involved, and I know you guys are certainly going to be thinking of her, and we thank you for that. So with that, we will move on to the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, Florida. Argenis Mendez taking on Martin Honorio and picking up the win, improving to 20-2 with 10 knockouts, a unanimous decision victory, 115-111, 116-110, 117-109 for the IBF Super Featherweight Title Eliminator. Overall, top to bottom, as I mentioned before, it was a very good card. Mendez scored a second victory over Honorio now, and he has now really emerged into the title hunt, I think, at 130 pounds. And since it was an IBF eliminator, perhaps Juan Carlos Salgado, a possible opponent for him, maybe even before the end of the year. Honorio lost a couple points for fouls, didn't put in all that beautiful a performance. I don't like when guys lose points for any sort of foul. There's really no need for a fight to even get to that point. Tried to make it a bit of an ugly fight, and he succeeded, but Argenis Mendez picking up the win, and a very big win for his career.
Definitely. And now it's time to see what he can do now and what leaves him. This was an eliminator. Maybe, hopefully, he does get a title shot. I like what you said about Salcido. That would be a good matchup. You know, and he's another Dominican superstar. You know, a lot of these Dominican fighters have been coming up, you know, Fernando Guerrero last week, and now we got Mendez. So it'd be interesting to see what he can do, what he's about to do to further his career and better his career now.
Ed Paredes picked up a TKO in the final round, round number 10, against Vivian Harris. Poor Vivian is just, he got absolutely demolished. He hasn't beaten anybody of note in over 5 years. He's been stopped 5 times in his last 9 fights, and he's getting beaten up, and it's really time for him to walk away after losing to Paredes.
Right, yeah, and after losing that, oh, I'm sorry, I was just another message I'm reading. Yeah, it's going to be tough, you know? It's just the situation that he puts himself in, and then, you know, it's just hard to bounce back like that.
Yeah, it's always difficult, and for Vivian Harris, I really just hope he retires. As for Paredes, he has the WBC Latino welterweight title. Be it as it may, he's sort of a borderline sort of guy in the division, where I believe BoxRank has him ranked 18th. You could make a case for being, possibly, I don't think you could put him inside the top 10 but at all. But there's people who could say, you know, he could challenge with some of those people, and all the power to him, but he hasn't fought a lot of big names, and this did absolutely nothing to add to his resume, in my opinion, given that Vivian Harris was so washed up. And then the fight that, just based off name recognition, people were really interested in, Joan Guzman runs his undefeated record. It's hard to believe he's undefeated. 33-0-1. With 20 knockouts, a first-round knockout over Jorge Pimentel. It took him only 33 seconds to pick up the victory. Yeah, with all of the weight troubles he's had and everything he's done, he's not a very popular fighter, but he is a talented fighter.
I like him. He's popular to me. I've always liked him. It's funny, and I normally don't like guys who can't make weight, but I got to say this is that one and only exception for me. I find him very entertaining, very exciting to watch. That's Baby Tyson. What more can you say? You know, it's just sad. What I find sad about it is that he has so much potential to become a star. Even back then when people were throwing him out to be the guy that beat Manny Pacquiao. You know, Pacquiao was somewhat avoiding him, people were saying. And he could have been a star, and I still believe. I don't know if he can now, it's because he is getting older, but the fact that, and his image too, but that's what sucks, is that he ruined that all by being that guy who couldn't make weight.
Yeah, he is. I'm sure that if he was listening, he would have called in, but we've had somebody, Dave, who's called into the show in the past, and the guy absolutely hates Joan Guzman. I really wish that he was listening in, because I'd love to get his thoughts on Joan, just for the sake of entertainment value here. But anyways, it was a great card. from the top to the bottom at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. Very interesting card. A lot of undefeated fighters on there. Felix Diaz, Glendy Hernandez, Juan Carlos Payano, and Claudio Marrera all on the card and picking up victories in their respective bouts. In the Philippines, in a fight that was technically on Saturday in the Philippines, but for Friday here, AJ Bernal picked up a victory over Ruben Manicane. It was a shutout. Not really all that interesting. But Bernal, it is worth noting that he's the number one WBO, number seven WBC, and number 11 IBF bantamweight contender. So just a stay busy fight for him, but a name to keep an eye on in the future.
Did you just say the ABCs right now?
Yeah, the ABCs of boxing. The World Boxing Organization, World Boxing Council, and International Boxing Federation, none of which mean absolutely anything important, but hey, it is what it is, and the titles do matter to some people, even though they don't to me.
You had got me confused for a second. I thought we were doing some nursery rhyming when you were going through that.
Really?
Yeah.
That stuff confuses you?
No, I'm not confused. I thought you were doing the nursery rhyming or something like that with all the ABCs. Yeah, it was definitely, again, it wasn't the most exciting fight. You know, it was one-sided. It was, you know, and he won clearly. That's, I mean, what more can you say about that fight, you know?
Yeah, he's staying busy, which is, it's good for him. I like fighters actually staying busy, especially even if it's not a risk for them. There's something to be said. It's a step above just sparring and training. It really keeps them in fighting focus. It's more incentive to keep them in fighting shape. And even when guys like Oscar De La Hoya go in and fight people like Steve Forbes, I think it's a good thing. I don't see any real harm in doing it. It's good to get it's good to get tune-up performances like that. Out in Mexico, Pablo Cesar Cano picking up the interim WBA. There's another one for you. WBA World Junior Welterweight title, a technical decision in round number 7 against Johan Perez. Pablo Cesar Cano, of course, known for most boxing fans, believe it or not, really know him as the guy who lost to Eric Morales at the conclusion of round number 10 at the MGM Grand on the undercard. September 17th, it was Mayweather-Ortiz on the undercard of that fight. That's how a lot of people got to know him. El Domelador, as he's known as, had a couple of uninspiring fights against Francisco Contreras and Fidel Monterosa Munoz. His fight against Perez, not really fantastic competition either, but worth noting that he picked up the win at least.
Yeah, well, I thought it was a fairly exciting fight, too, for a little bit. And then, you know, it did get stopped early due to cuts and everything. It was a fairly bad cut too. You know, it was all from the headbutt, if I'm not mistaken. But you're right what you said about Cano, how he's basically got his fame from, you know, the Mayweather Ortiz undercard fighting Morales. But you know, it was good for Cano get back in that area of, you know, trying to become a legit top prospect again, or whatever you would want to call it, a contender. I meant contender. I'm sorry. You know, so it was a good win that he picked up there.
Yeah, it is at least a good win. Jorge La Cerva put up a spirited performance, but went down twice in round number 9 against Brian Vasquez, who improves to 28-0 with 15 knockouts. He is somebody in the super featherweight division. He fought on Azteca and Tijuana at the Oratorio Municipal. I thought Vasquez looked pretty good. And he's somebody who perhaps he's worthy of top 10 status in the super featherweight division, but somebody who not a whole lot of people know all that much about.
Right. I didn't know too much about him either, to be honest with you, but it was a solid fight, and it is a fight it was a perfect fight for him to get people to keep an eye on.
It is a good fight. And for Vasquez, where do you think he goes from here, and how do you think he ranks in the division? A division in the midst of names like Adrian Broner, though he'll be moving up, of course, Takashi Uchiyama, Takahiro Au, guys who mostly inhabit the division and are good champions, but far away from Brian Vasquez. I mean, he's got guys from Mexico like Juan Carlos Salgado, Juan Carlos Burgos, Javier Fortuna, perhaps, and even Jonathan Victor Barros. Where do you think he weighs in?
Well, first, Javier Fortuna needs to be up higher than this, I think, already. I'm sorry, that guy's exciting to watch. But, you know, it'd be a good matchup maybe with Burgos. That'd be a good, you know, I don't know how much of it would be good for Burgos, though, because I think Burgos is up there already where he might be able to get another shot pretty soon. Wi-Fi someone on the come up like that. But I definitely think that there's a lot of fights out there to be made. I think that division has a lot of interesting fights, period. With even, especially for guys like Vasquez and even Javier Fortuna, who I feel is making a big climb up the ladder quickly all of a sudden. So that's an exciting division to watch out for.
It could be, absolutely. And somebody who I'm sure can weigh in on that, because he's seen that fight in just about every single other fight that's ever aired on television in the history of the sport of boxing, it seems. Ryan Bivens, formerly of Sweet Boxing, coming on the show. Hey, Ryan, thanks for coming on once again.
Hey, glad to be here. I wouldn't go that far in saying I've seen every fight in the history of boxing.
Okay, fine. Up to about 1990.
Yeah, okay. Well, this week, there's still one card that I'm still downloading now, which I want to see, because it has it's an Italian card. The main event is supposedly pretty good. Hold on, let me pull that up. It's Ermanno Figatilli versus Davis Bashiero. So I'll let y'all know later if that pans out. But from what I've seen this week, the best fight of the week that I saw happened, you know, right after we did the show, the last week on Monday. You know, over in Japan, you had the flyaway championship fight between Sonny Boy Jarro and Toshiyuki Igarashi.
Now that was on, you said Monday?
Yeah, that was on Monday.
Oh wow, so is that fight already up on your site?
Yeah, it's been up for a while.
All right, nice. Now that's something that everyone make sure you go check out. Is I think I remember it, and correct me if I'm wrong. Sweetboxing.wordpress.com, is that right?
Yeah. Sweetboxingvideos.wordpress.com.
Sweetboxing videos, there you go. Now, since we've been asking everyone, actually, you know, let's go away from Broner real quick. We were talking about Olympics. How do you feel about the Olympics? Anyone out there that you find interesting?
Not really. I'm not big on, you know, amateur boxing so much, especially with the Olympics, because how American fighters are treated in it. It's just not only is the point system, you know, not the best, but we just straight up get robbed. You know, even you know, playing by the rules, we get robbed. So I just don't put too much stock into it.
All right, hey Ryan, but real quick before we let you go, we were just talking about Ryan Vasquez. How do you think he weighs him compared to the rest of the division at super featherweight?
He's ready for taking on some guys that are, you know, rated in the top 10, definitely.
Like who?
Super featherweight. Let's see, who's that super featherweight? I mean, I wouldn't put him against, you know, Salgado and Uchiyama yet, but I mean, you know, some of the lower rated guys. You know, maybe even give him, you know, somebody's leftover that, you know, people have seen on the air, because like Eloy Perez, you know, somebody give him name recognition.
Name value. Yep.
Right.
All right. Hey, Ryan, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Oh, hold on. One more thing I wanted to say.
Okay.
People, you know, keep making these comparisons between, you know, Broner missing weight and, you know, Floyd Mayweather. You know, pretty much everything Broner does is always some comparison between Floyd Mayweather. You know, it's kind of a stretch. Because first off, Floyd Mayweather had a welterweight fight with Juan Manuel Marquez. It was scheduled to be a welterweight fight, and
right.
It was a welterweight fight. You know, because they negotiated at a catchweight, you know, it was still a welterweight fight. And if you ask Floyd before the fight, you know, what weight is this fight going to be at? It's a welterweight fight. You know, so from the very beginning, he wasn't sure what weight he was going to come in at, but he knew he was okay under the rules of boxing. That as long as it was 147 or under, he was cool. I mean, all
right.
These weight divisions, I mean, they're already close enough as it is between, you know, Broner, you know, was above his weight division, so it's not the same thing.
That's where I agree with you.
Broner is a lot like Mayweather, though. Heck, he came into the ring wearing a Free Money May t-shirt. He welcomes the comparisons to Floyd Mayweather Jr., in my opinion. There's a lot of, in terms of their flamboyant and completely outspoken, outlandish personalities, there's a lot of similarities, and he's flashy. He's a showman. They may not quite fight the same way, but I disagree. I think there's a ton of similarities between him and Mayweather, not just in terms of the struggle to make weight, but overall. But it is what it is.
I would say it's forced, though. You know, like he's like trying to be Mayweather. I don't think he's.
Oh yeah.
I don't think he's naturally like the same guy. You know what Floyd does, like Josh said earlier. You know it. He does it like, you know, naturally, you know, things, if bad things happen, you know, it was an accident, you know, out of emotion. Whereas Broner, you know, everything's, you know, orchestrated.
Right. That's exactly how that's what I'm saying. Like, I can see where the comparisons come from, but I think he's far from being like Floyd Mayweather, whether it's skill, talent, or just persona. I kind of said that earlier on the other caller about the Marquez one. I wasn't upset too much at Floyd not making weight. I mean, he made weight. It was a 140. It was a welterweight fight. I'm more upset that they even try to make it a catchweight because I'm not a fan of catchweight fights.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they got these junior divisions, those are catchweight divisions in the first place, you know?
Right.
I'm all for about the original weight, except, you know, I can make exceptions for cruiserweight and strawweight. Because fighters have gotten a lot bigger, and strawweight is the smallest you can go.
Hey, Ryan, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Yeah, all right. Talk to you next week.
You can always follow him at Sweet Boxing on Twitter. Got a lot of great comments on boxing and just about everything else. You can follow me at JJ Sebastian. I'll have Josh tweet that out at BigTree33 for him if you want to follow us on Twitter. They're mostly boxing stuff. I'll dabble into a bunch of things. Personally, today, one of the nice things about having a bit of a slower weekend for fights is I was able to watch them all live and not really have to watch too much delayed today, so I got a chance to enjoy the Open Championship on ESPN and watching poor Adam Scott blow a 4-stroke lead in the final 4 holes. Nothing, not even boxing has the sort of mental anguish and one-on-one aspect that golf does. I've always appreciated that. But enough talk about that, and back in inside the ring, Jorge Paez Jr., a unanimous decision win over Omar Chavez. To me, this is the most overshadowed bout of the weekend that I thought really deserved some sort of recognition. Jorge Paez got the win on the scorecards 96-94 across the board from judges Max DeLuca, Steve Morrow, and Zach Young. This is the vacant WBC International Silver Junior Middleweight title. Paez, a lot like his father, Jorge Paez Sr., and as for Omar Chavez, he came in with a pretty good record, 28-1-1 with 21 knockouts at the time. Of course, hailing from Culiacan and well-known as the youngest son of Julio Cesar Chavez. Of course, Julio Jr. is the one who gets a lot of the recognition. But Omar is a pretty talented kid. And this is the second time that Jorge Paez has beaten, or not just the second time, on multiple occasions he's beaten guys who... You know, the other guy was favored. He handed Omar Chavez his first loss back when Chavez was undefeated in December of 2011.
Definitely. And then we were, like I was saying earlier, the comments that he thought he should have won with Omar Chavez comments. That was another catchy thing that brought the attention to me on wanting to make sure I watched that fight. But it was definitely a good fight for Paez.
It was very, very solid. And you look at some of the names on his resume. Granted, Jose Luis Castillo in March of 2011. I mean, that doesn't really mean anything more than name value. But, hey, he still fought him and he still beat him. He's got 2 wins over Omar Chavez, who was very, very solid. He's had some pretty good performances in his career. And even though he's not all that much more besides top 50 in the junior middleweight division, at age 24, he can make for some pretty interesting fights. Of course, the son of the former featherweight champion, WBO and IBF champ, Jorge Paez. He's a former, pretty good amateur fighter, but he's learned a lot in the ring as well. Not quite as big a showman as his father was. I mean, his father was just something else with the backflips and everything else that guy did. But El Raton picking up the victory. He's also known as El Marmieto. In Spanish, very intriguing character. He's a character. That's what he is.
He definitely is a character, and I think that's the best way to describe him as a character. I've always found that funny when people call other people characters. It's like, you know, sometimes people use out of context, and this time it's just a perfect way to describe the guy.
A lot of times it's used as an insult disguised as a compliment.
Right.
Like one of my favorite quotes from the telecast a few weeks ago, Sugar Ray Leonard calling Derek Kay and David Hay and Derek Chisora, calling them both characters.
Right.
And, you know, and it was so clearly used in a derogatory manner. But regardless, I remember, hey, with a few minutes left in the show, you can still call in. Area code 347-215-7598. Talk boxing with us here on The Boxing Fix. We're boxing addicts. Come to get their fix. And, of course, for those boxing addicts looking for an extra fix, there's plenty of other shows on Leave It in the Ring and plenty of other things in print and online that they can find, too.
Dynamite segue right there, Joel. On Monday, you got for you Spanish speakers. You got Noche de Boxeo. That's Mondays 5 Pacific. Damn, I'm messing that one up today. 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. Thursday, you got Leave It in the Ring Radio with host Dave Duenas and the Dark Cloud Gamer, Gabriel Montoya. And just like our producer on this show, also the producer on that show is Mr. David Chen. And don't forget, get your Undisputed Fight magazine at UndisputedFightMag.com. If you're a true boxing fan, you definitely need to have one of those.
Yep, plenty of stuff to offer on Leave It in the Ring Radio. So anyway, with that, I do want to talk about Saturday night and Thursday night as well. Jimmy Birchfield's Classic Entertainment and Sports put on a pair of really good cards. On Saturday night, last night in the middleweight division, Elvin the Lycan Ayala picked up a victory over John Mackey at TKO in round number 9 for the WBC US NBC middleweight title. Ayala's looked solid in his last few fights, and I'm very interested to see where he goes with his career, especially considering the fact that the fight I really wanted to see him in against was against, why am I blanking on the name? Who is he going to fight? Shoot, this isn't good. I'm totally blanking on it right now, but it'll come back to me any second. He was supposed to fight earlier in the spring, and that would have made for a very good fight on ESPN's Friday Night Fights. But unfortunately, the bout never squared up. And as for Elvin Ayala, he's had some close calls in his career. It's not the most glamorous record, but he's a solid fighter and possibly a little bit more on a local level. Maybe. It's a bit of a stretch, but he's definitely a top 30 middleweight, in my opinion. And at age 31, he's got a couple of good fights against him, against some higher competition.
Definitely. And like you said, it's not too much of a stretch, but kind of is. It's right in between, you know. For that fight, he was just, he let go. He was throwing punches, you know, and it looked good. I think it was the ninth round, right? It was the ninth round, correct, Joel?
Yes.
Yeah, ninth round.
By the way, it was Hector Camacho Jr. that he was scheduled to fight before. Camacho, a well-known pull-out artist, pulled out once again.
Pause. But, I also live, man. He let his hands go, and it was just a pretty it was a big flurry, too. A barrage of punches that stopped him, stopped Mackey. Is Joel there, Joel? Well, I think we dropped Joel again. Joel's, you know, always dealing with some thunderstorms out there, you know, on the East Coast. You guys are crazy out there. But that was a decent fight.
Hey, Josh, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're back on.
My apologies. I just came off the show. So with that, we'll bring on Vladeen Biasi. Vlad, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. Appreciate you having me, man.
Now, your fight wasn't on television on Thursday night, so especially since we have a big West Coast audience, why don't you take us through the fight Thursday night in your own words?
Oh, man, it was a solid fight, man. It was a fight that we had to go in and use our head, and it was a fight that, you know, just be smart and be a boxer and just, you know, a lot of people, you know, think of being a fighter is just going in and slugging. And especially looking at me with my football background, a lot of people think, you know, all I do is go out there and slug instead of going there and being a boxer and being smart. So a fight on Thursday night was for me was a fight to use my head and be smart, and also learn, you know. And so we went through from the first round. I came out there very excited, I think overly excited, instead of coming out composed. My corner, which Alonzo Valls, my coach, and my coach Ray Oliveira, you know, they calmed me down coming into the second round. So I started using my head more. From second round on, I was more of a thinker, setting up punches, and then when it went in, second and third round, it was like that. And then on the fourth round, my coach saw that my punches was effective, especially body shots, and they called it. And they just asked me to go out there, compose, and just pick my shots and pick the body shots, and moving my head and my legs, using my agility to be able to set up those shots, and I was able to do that, and that's why when my opponent went in for the fifth round, he didn't come out.
Now, Vladin, you know, you brought up about your football background. What position? First of all, what position were you when you played football?
Well, in high school, I played running back, but when I went to college, beginning of my career in college, I played I was a defensive back. I played defensive back for 2 years, and then I went on the next 2 years. I played both sides. I played defensive back and also played wide receiver.
How much does football help you as far as, you know, work ethic and translate inside the ring?
Football is huge, man. Football is a big transition in my life. It was a big positive, and I think there's a lot of things I do in life now with boxing and being a father and all bunch of stuff. Football, what I learned in football outside of the field and in locker rooms and, you know, amongst with my teammates definitely helped me big time with what I do now. You know, the mentality of a football player is something else.
Oh, okay, yeah. He is.
You know, the mentality of a football player is something else.
Now, you've
had... A lot of people don't... Go ahead. Hello?
Are you there, Vla? I think we keep dropping Vla Dimbias. Yeah, there he is. He's back. Our apologies for the technical difficulties that we're having on the Boxing Fix right now and leaving the ringradio.com. You've had some fights on ESPN, one against Tim Connors, and you've had some good bounce back wins, a strong victory over Joe Spina and George Armenta. Mm-hmm. But after losing by TKO to Dennis Groshev and a draw with John Mackey, a lot of people speculated that your career had plateaued talent-wise. How do you respond to those critics? And after the victory in round number 5 against Michael Walchuk, where do you think you stand now in terms of future fights in the super middleweight division?
The critics is what make a fighter. The critics is what make him break the fighter. So I welcome all critics. I welcome all commentators, because you know what, that feeds me, that's a fuel to my fire. It continues keeping my fire burning. I don't allow anybody to make a decision or tell me when I'm done and when I'm not done. I have a lot to offer in this sports, in this sport, and I'm gonna continue to do so. Obviously, you know, I wasn't the same person. I definitely agree with whoever criticized me. After my loss, I was definitely not the same person. I was definitely not working to my potential. But I don't think it's because I wasn't working out less or anything like that. It was just figuring out a new path in my career. And then that's exactly what I did. And I, you know, figured it out. I never suffered a loss professionally. So it was a devastating moment for me. But I had to really figure myself out and say, hey, look, man, you win some, you lose some, but you are a champion, regardless of what it is. You are a champion. You have to come back in there and do what you do best.
Now, you're a very solid draw in the state of Rhode Island. Your nickname is Mr. Providence. You are the man of the city in terms of boxing. But would you consider traveling outside of the state and outside of the region for a fighter who perhaps has a little bit more to offer?
Of course. If I wouldn't do that, then I shouldn't be boxing at all. You know, this game of boxing is about it's not just about boxing. At least to me, it's not. I'm in this game because it's a business. I'm looking to flourish and better in my business and become a bigger businessman. And as far as my knowledge of the game, as far as my earnings in the game. So the only way to do that is to be able to do those kind of things. And you know, and that decision definitely, you know, I trust that decision to be made by my management and my promotion team, and just whatever decision they make for me, you know, obviously I got the last say of it. I don't just do whatever I'm told to do, but I honor whatever they think of for me to do, just because their longevity in the game and their interest in me. I definitely honor what they got coming for me, but I definitely I consider all that, man. I consider all that stuff, and I consider going places in there. You know, that's what I do. I'm a boxer, and being able to box and do all the stuff, you got to be able to travel, you know, and experience different things and go out there and beat different champions and beat different people and let people know, hey, I'm here, man.
Yeah, now you've been promoted just about your entire career by Jimmy Birchfield's Classic Entertainment and Sports. Explain what type of an impact Jimmy's had on your career, because in Rhode Island and really in New England, he's the premier boxing promoter, and it's got to be great to have those guys backing you and really steering your career the way they have.
Yeah, definitely, man. I'm very honored. Very honored. Especially, when I first started, I had my pro debut actually on Luda Bell's card in Worcester with Edwin Rodriguez as the main event. And then after that, I was really, I was searching for different promoters or different cards to get on. And a lot of people didn't give me the credit or didn't give me the shot to be able to get on their card. Because all they looked at is, oh, he's a football player. He never boxed before. He doesn't have a long boxing career. So we really don't believe in what he can do. So a lot of promoters shied away from taking up the chance and giving me the opportunity to do boxing. When we went to see Jimmy was very open to us. Jimmy was very clear, hey, look, man, if you want to do this for real, this is the house you need to be at. We'll give you the chance to do so as long as you want to do it for real. And, I'm very honored to be able to get that chance. And, and that's why I sleep, eat, boxing every day, and I try to make sure I don't make him eat his words, because the chance he gave me is once in a lifetime chances. Not everybody get the chance I got.
Hey Vlad, before we let you go, why don't you tell everybody how they can find out more about you on social media, and let us know when we can expect to see you in the ring next.
Well, definitely you can definitely follow me on social media. I'm on Facebook. Vladim D.I.C. on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Mr. Providence. Definitely follow me on Twitter. On Twitter there's a lot of you really find out really what I'm all about and what I do, what I don't do, jokes and different things. And it's so much about me beyond boxing. So I'm not just boxing. So you get the chance to find all that about me. Me back in the ring, man, it's really, again, it's up to my promoting team, my management team, my coaches. They all come together and we make a decision together. We are a team and I operate as a team, and I'm so glad that I understand how to work as a team with my football and all that and the soccer background and understanding how a team works. So I'm so honored to know that. So, and that's how we operate. We work as a team, we make decisions as a team, and then we go forward. So as soon as they get back to me and let me know what they think, what they got planned, we'll get back on the cards and we'll keep it moving. And I'll be ready, because I don't leave the gym. I fought on Thursday night, I'm back in the gym tomorrow night. And this is how I do it. I'm right back at it Monday. I don't take weeks, 2 weeks or whatever, out of the gym. I'm right back in the gym Monday, and I'm preparing like as if I got a fight next week.
All right, Vladine, thank you for coming on the show, and my apologies for cutting you off earlier. Based on some of the feedback I've gotten, I guess the technical difficulties were only on my end. For whatever reason, I couldn't hear you coming through and talking. But sorry for the difficulties, and thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. Congratulations on the win.
No, appreciation's all mine. I definitely appreciate you guys having me on your show. You know, we're going to continue working hard, and definitely you guys keep me connected with your show. Whenever you guys need to holler at me, give me a holler, man. I would love to be back with you guys and keep you guys informed on what we're doing.
All right. Thank you, Vla. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Vladine, Mr. Providence Biasi, our final guest on the show. The boxing fix this evening ran his record to 14-1-1 with 7 knockouts after Michael Walchuk, the Canadian, quit on the stool at the conclusion of round number 5 Thursday night at the Twin River Event Center in Lincoln, Rhode Island, right in my backyard, only about 15 minutes away. Love the cards that Jimmy Birchfield puts on in that neck of the woods. But that does it for all the fights that we have to cover. So we'll end the show with rants and raves, unless you guys want to call in and stir up a little bit more boxing talk here on the Boxing Fix, where boxing addicts come to get their fix. So got a few minutes left in the show to call in. Area code 347-215-7598 if you want to talk some boxing with us. But starting off for the rants and raves, you got to have a rant about Selko Gayden.
Yeah, and well, before I say that, you know, I want everyone to know, let me give your plug real quick. You were you covered that fight, didn't you? And everyone can find that on leaveitintheringradio.com. Your fight, I can't even talk now. Your whole analysis on the fight right there. So make sure everyone go check that out. You can find more about Biasi and all the other fighters that were on that card. So you got to give you your plug.
Yeah, thank you very much. You absolutely can. And, of course, the first Friday of every month, you can check out my monthly awards column that goes up on the website, too. Knockout of the month, fight of the month, and everything of that nature as well. But tell us a little bit about your rant and sound off here.
Yeah, man. Selko Gayden is I don't want to be that mean. The guy's ridiculously retarded. He made such a
That sounded mean to me.
No, I mean,
what in the world
the
did
words...
you elect not to say?
Oh, you don't know. the other day was his media press conference call with Robert the Ghost Guerrero. And, you know, they introduced him. Richard Safer introduces Selko Gayden, actually his manager or someone first. And, you know, it's Aiden was first up to talk, you know, to address the media, to get exposure, because a lot of people don't know too much about him other than his nickname is Little Tyson or something like that. Here's the thing. This is your chance to get media exposure. He had the nerve to, first of all, not even say this. This was relayed by his interpreter or manager or promoter that he will not get on the conference call because he feels like the media has not been fair to him and gave him enough attention like he deserves to have. I find that just, first of all, it's just the stupidest move. First of all, I think he needs a better PR. Maybe he needs Emily to be his PR.
He could use Emily as his PR, but continue. You know, I disagree.
But here's the thing. This is why it's bad. This is your chance to get the exposure. This is your chance to get that exposure, and you're going to elect not to and badmouth the American media. I think that's just plain ridiculous. And now it goes even further. When Guerrero goes and talks, all of a sudden – I didn't have something to say from the ring, supposedly. And again, his manager says, oh, this is another message relayed over to me from Aiden that Guerrero needs to stop all the talking. He talks like a politician, and he should worry about training and strengthening his jaw because he's going to break it. Look, I'm going to be quite frank with you. I don't even think he said it. This was relayed? Come on, man. That was just ridiculous. Plain and simple. That's my rant.
Okay, well, you know what? Let me just do a quick segue into one of my raves here. And my rave is about Selko Gayden. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great. It gives us something to talk about. And electing to train instead of doing the media conference call, I don't know, maybe it's just conference call, so it didn't bother me that we didn't have any quotes or anything like that. But hey, he feels disrespected because nobody's talking about him and they're all talking about Guerrero. I thought it was great. How many fighters have you heard of electing to train? You can hear the heavy bag in the background. How many guys have pulled that off before. I thought it was unique. I thought it was, personally, I thought it was better than just staying in the conference call and bad-mouthing Guerrero and, you know, in the American media like so many guys have done. I thought it was his own unique little spin on things. And personally, I thought it was just a really, really great thing. I personally loved it and thought that it was just so cool. It was great. It was kind of funny, and at the same time, I think he has a lot of facts to validate his point too. So it was really it was really cool. I actually had a lot of praise for Selkirk Gaydon for doing that. I thought that that was an interesting way to handle it, and better than the ways that a lot of people would handle it. Although I guess I'm in the minority on that one, because people seem to really think that Aiden was just too disrespectful and shouldn't have done that. But I think there's different types of disrespectful, and for Selkirk Gaydon, for some reason, this just kind of struck a chord with me, and I found it unique, and hey, you know what? People, I've heard people complain and say, oh, well, this was his opportunity for publicity. You know what? He's getting it. He's got people like us talking about it. Selkirk Gaydon blew off the conference call to go and train for the fight. It's getting the word out, isn't it?
I guess. I mean, it's getting the word out, but we still don't know anything about him. I'm still in the dark about him, we'll put it that way. And my thing was, first of all, I didn't hear no punching bag in the background. You got good ears. I didn't hear nothing, first of all. You know, and what pisses me off, too, is that they were very rude. I thought they were rude about it, too. They cut off comments that were being made either by the media or questions from the media or comments from Guerrero and his camp. And I think that's what another thing that was very upsetting was that it was just rude. It was very rude, in my opinion.
Yep, it was. Remember, you can call in to the Boxing Fix, area code 347-215-7598. For the raves, what do you have for raves?
I couldn't find anything too much to rave about right now, to tell you the truth. I mean, this weekend was kind of hard, but one thing I'm going to rave about Burgos. It was a great fight for him. I thought he put on an excellent performance. He looked like he was going to have trouble in the beginning, ends up solving the problem quickly and knocking out his opponent. So big ups to him. Although, actually, let me rephrase that. I do have a bit of a rave. But, you know, I'll say there's this fighter. It's a female fighter. And this is for all the guys out there. You know, all you guys, boxing fans, I'm sorry for all you guys who are married out there. You might got to be careful, and I don't want you to get in trouble. But LaBarbie, who fought last week, she has just announced that she is going to be doing a Playboy spread. So that's a rave right there. That's all I got to say. I don't need to say any more.
I'm not going to touch that one. I'm just going to let that one – I'll let you formulate your own opinions about that. I'm going to stay squeaky clean and away from that stuff. But, hey, it's news and notes. Okay. Just more praise for Vicente Escobedo. Good for him for, first of all, taking a fight that he didn't need to take and for not letting the fans down. Although, I mean – in all honesty, it would have been Broner letting the fans down. But still, he fulfilled his end of the bargain and was still willing to put on a show. He got some extra money out of it. And with a family at home, he was backed into a corner. Even though he was the man in power, he didn't have a choice. So good for Vicente Escobedo for taking the fight. And I've got nothing for praise for him. He just vaults to the top of my respected fighters list for doing what he did. Props to him for not only taking the fight, but for his assertive way of handling it and saying, no, you know what, I'm not going to fight unless you at least give me a damn good incentive. Should fight, because Broner came in overweight. He had absolutely no regard for the contract, which is a rant all in itself, but we've spent so much I chose not to get into it at this point. But just more props for Chente for taking the fight, and I really hope that good things come in his future. If there's such thing as karma, he's absolutely going to get some good karma coming his way.
Definitely, and I couldn't agree with you anymore. And you know what? Shout out to Joel Diaz, because another thing we didn't really talk too much about, I think he did an excellent job knowing when to stop the fight. I think he knew himself. Like, if Escobedo got into any big trouble, he needed to stop the fight because the fact how much bigger Broner was. So I thought Joel Diaz did a great job calling the fight. Although I was waiting for him to throw the towel, and he was just waving it when the guy had his back turned. So I was like,
yeah, I'm not sure what he was doing there, just throwing the towel, but. regardless, it was a very good stoppage from Joel Diaz. I'm glad that he chose to stop it when he did. But I think there's a lot of people disappointed that the fight couldn't go a little more in Vicente's way. Of course, a look at what's coming up next week in boxing. Next Friday night, last week we had Hammer and Hank Lundy and Raymundo Beltran on the show. Friday at the Resorts Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. They fight each other as the main event on ESPN2's Friday Night Fights. Farrah Ennis and Richard Pearson square off, as do Michael Cartagena and Jose Rivera. Your thoughts on that fight? Not on the Cartagena fight, but on the Lundy and Beltran fight, the main event.
I'm excited for that fight. And do you want me to give a pick? I would like a prediction.
Sure, go for it if you want to.
All right. You know, a lot of people are going to disagree with me, and I'm always going against Lundy, and I'm going against him again. Beltran's going to pull this off. He's going to shock the world. That's my upset pick of the week, if you want to call it, too. I like Ray Beltran. I think he can do it. I'm not a fan of Hank Lundy. I think I mentioned last week that some people know about it. Well, being honest right now, there's a lot of things about Hank that I'm not a fan of, and I think I think he's going to get stopped. I think he's looking past Ray Beltran. I think that's the main reason why I think he's going to get stopped, is because he's looking past him. I think he's looking too far ahead for that rematch against Molina, or too busy talking about Adrian Broner on Twitter and all that, you know. And I think it's going to backfire in his face. And I really think Ray Beltran has a chance to do this, you know, because he's not a pushover by any means.
He's not. I do think that Lundy's going to pick up the victory and do it with relative ease and move on. But, hey, kudos to Hank Lundy for not choosing just to sit on the number one contender status and for choosing to get in the ring and put on a show for the fans. Saturday night, July 28th at the Domo de la Feria in Leon, Guanajuato, Mexico, Edgar Sosa takes on Shigetaka Igahara for the WBC Silver Flyweight title. That'll be one to watch for Miguel Roman. Heading into the ring as well. He has 10 career losses, only one of them by knockout. Well, balanced by 37 wins with 28 by KO. He squares off in the super featherweight division in an 8-round attraction against Dante Jardone. And then Saturday night, of course, we mentioned Robert Guerrero and Selkirk Gaden. They square off at the HP Pavilion in San Jose, California. Also on that card, Sean Porter takes on the contender veteran Alfonso Gomez. And George Groves takes on Francisco Sierra. To me, that's the fight that I'm most interested in. George Groves, somebody in the United Kingdom, perhaps a top 10 super middleweight at 14-0, 11 knockouts, who doesn't get a whole lot of credit. Personally, I'm disappointed it's only an 8-round contest, because I think that this has potential to be a really interesting and entertaining fight.
Well, yeah, that's exciting. I've seen Groves fight, and he's excited. I agree with you there, but I'm more excited about the main event, I got to say. It has a lot of different things going on in this fight. I mean, you got Aiden, who's just a lot of people don't know about, but he's a vicious puncher. And we got Guerrero, who's jumping up two weight classes. You know, and I've always been a fan of Guerrero because of the way he's been through with his wife. And I think it's a great story, amazing story, in fact, you know. And Guerrero's up there trying to get this match with Mayweather. And, you know, not saying that he doesn't deserve it or he doesn't deserve it, but, you know, he's trying. He's pressing for it. You know, he's doing what he has to do to get it. And a lot of people don't think he'll be able to move up two weight classes, and he's going and doing this, and I think it makes for a good matchup.
It does make for a very good fight. And then Grady Brewer taking on Giorgis Barthelemy in Atlanta, Georgia. Barthelemy 25-9-2. Not really all that much. It's for the vacant IBO Intercontinental Junior Middleweight title, if you really care about that. Grady
Too many
Brewer.
Letters.
Grady Brewer is also another alum of the contender and somebody who always makes for a tough opponent. You never know quite what you're going to get with him. Bit of a light schedule for boxing next week. But nonetheless, we will be back on the Boxing Fix next week. Be sure to stay tuned to LeaveItInTheRingRadio.com. Check out all our other platforms, and of course, keep your thoughts and prayers with the family of publicist Emily Pandelakis during this tough time in her family. So all of us here at Leave It In The Ring Radio on the Boxing Fix, David Chen on the soundboard, Jill Sebastianelli, my co-host, Josh McDaniel, my co-host. I am Joel Sebastianelli saying so long on the Boxing Fix, where boxing addicts come to get their fix. Remember to support those who support the sport.